Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
No, but so after this, is it going to be a world tour? How long do you expect to go out on the road to support the album?
18 minutes.
Yeah, you meant to say months.
I hope it's 3 years again, because that would mean that we had six or seven singles.
Yeah,
that'd be nice.
That would
think
be
about having site. Seven singles on All the Right Reasons. I mean, you know, and spending over 130 weeks in the top 30. And being the biggest selling rock album of the last couple of years. It's a pretty incredible achievement.
It's been a great ride.
That was cool.
It really is.
Well, guys, thanks so much for joining me this evening.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to have you and debuting the brand new album. Good to see you again. That's Nickelback, Inside Dark Horse, the world premiere of the new album. Hope you enjoyed it. And remember, go out and get it November 18th, or you can order it online. I'm Matt Pinfield, coming from the studio in New York City. Have a great night.
101.1 WRIF. WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now.
Welcome to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and welcome to another Sunday night of Night Call. Jalene Jordan, my co-host and producer, is here. Hi, Jalene.
Peter, hello.
Hello, and if you're listening elsewhere in the country or the world, we are walking gingerly across the WRIF parking lot because it's ice-covered, snow everywhere. I am unready for this.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I thought it was kind of a nice wintry day.
Yeah. What did they start singing all those songs? Some of those stations that are playing 24-hour a day.
Christmas music?
Ah!
They started right after Halloween.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being a DJ at one of those stations?
And
I'd lose it.
And that station, the ones that do are very popular.
Yeah, I think it's getting less popular, isn't it?
I hope so. I mean, how many times can you listen to I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus and what else is there? Jingle Bell Rock.
You know, if you really listen to that, by the time any holiday is even near, by Thanksgiving, you're sick of the holidays.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, you're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan. Our phone numbers are 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And you can tell by the fact that we gave you phone numbers and suggest that you call in that this is a call-in phone show. And we've been doing it for a while. This has been actually Night Call goes back. Are you ready for this? Almost 40 years.
That's a long time.
Right.
Beat that any show out
there. If you would like to email us, if you're either bashful or the lines are filled, which I can't see any lines. No, they're ringing away. Alex is there, our phone screener. And be nice to him. He doesn't do anything. And when you don't agree with me, sometimes people call him up and say,
be nice to him.
You know, say, hi, Alex, that guy in the air.
Save it for Peter.
Yeah.
And me.
Or Jalene. Yeah, so,
or me, right.
Yeah, MySpace is myspace.com/nightcallshow. That's myspace.com, nightcall show. And are we up and running with Facebook?
We are.
Okay, which is?
We are. I don't really know an address, but just do a search for Nightcall. I don't know if they have how they do that.
Yes.
I'm pretty new to Facebook, and we have someone else putting the page together for us, Debbie.
Debbie in Northampton, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Debbie. You're wonderful. Bringing us into what age? What would you call it?
A new age.
A new age. No, I don't like that. But I have no understanding of it all, but I appreciate it. You know, just when you think, that like Sarah Palin has like drifted off into history, you know, something maybe like Monica Lewinsky or something.
She's back. She's not going anywhere, Peter. She's going to annoy us for years to come.
You know, I actually found something that I mentioned it, I believe, before the election. This is from CNN from October 22nd. And you know, people hate it when you're reminded of things you said that were really dumb. And let's see, she said, in an interview posted online Wednesday, Sarah Palin told Dr. James Dobson of Focus on the Family, this is as far right-wing, I hope they don't have tax exemption for being a church, because they are so political. Anyway, she said she is confident God will do the right thing for America on November 4th.
Yes.
So what does that mean?
That means...
Does she think that God did
the right thing?
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine
the
arrogance of somebody that thinks God is going to settle elections?
She is about as arrogant as they come, Peter.
Yeah. She said, it strengthens my faith because I know at the end of the day, putting this in God's hands, the right thing for America will be done at the end of the day on November 4th. Well, whoa, I don't even know what to, why doesn't someone throw that back at her?
That's a good question.
Let me see, I had one other thing.
Let's suggest it to the networks who are going pale and crazy.
She also thanked her supporters, including Dobson, who said he and his wife were asking for, quote, God's intervention on Election Day for their prayers of support. Well, I mean, I don't know that they actually came out. Well, I don't know. Did they actually come out and declare for McCain and Palin? I mean, that would really suggest them losing their tax-exempt status. I don't know why churches get tax-exempt status anyways, but they do. And a South Carolina Roman Catholic priest told his parishioners that they should refrain from receiving Holy Communion if they voted for Barack Obama because the Democratic president-elect supports abortion and supporting him, quote, constitutes material cooperation with intrinsic evil. All right, yank his tax-exempt status, please.
Immediately.
Right, although I think the archbishop overruled him recently. But God works in mysterious ways, doesn't he?
Oh, are you talking about the doorman?
The doorman, God as doorman. But also, God really works in mysterious ways. Do you know what he has created at the bottom of the sea?
What a creature?
Weird little creatures. Why he did that. We know that God works in mysterious ways. But here's what Governor Sarah Palin said in an interview with Fox News this week. Faith is a very big... Do you want to read this? Do you want to do a Sarah Palin?
No, I can't even stomach it.
All right. Faith is a very big part of my life and putting my life in my Creator's hands. This is what I always do. I'm like, okay, God, if there's an open door for me somewhere, this is what I always pray. I'm like, don't let me miss the open door. Show me where the door is. I'll show you where the door is.
Uh-huh.
And don't let it hit you in the ass.
Yeah.
But that's what I said. So she went on, even if it's cracked up a... This is she's so
you can't even read
she's
her.
So insane.
Yeah.
But even if it's cracked up a little bit, man, maybe I'll plow right through that. Maybe prematurely plow through it, and don't let me miss an open door. And if there's an open door in 2012 or 4 years later, and it's something that is going to be good for my family, for my state, for my nation, an opportunity for me, then I'll plow through that door.
Yeah, she is a real
so
gem.
So she sees God as a doorman. But here is a listener who sees him as a radio program director. Now, as you know...
I know where you're going.
Yeah. At the end of this phone-in talk show, which goes from our time here in Detroit, from 11 p.m. till 1 a.m., and then we have recorded interviews that I did earlier in the week, and... I'm sorry. You got the new one up there. You go to Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, Peter Werbe. And if you go back to the week before, which would be November 9th, you can see the interview that I did with Ron Aronson, who's a professor of a distinguished, his title is Distinguished Professor of the History of Ideas, if I remember correctly, at Wayne State University. He's like the foremost person in the world, in the English language, on the existential philosophy of Jean-Paul Sartre.
Really?
Yeah. What a dude. But, you know, you know how those guys are.
They're cool. Yeah, I do. They're way cool.
So he wrote a book called Living Without God, because existentialism, the philosophy, which I think really kind of guides my life, and in many ways does most of ours, because you can kind of dress it all up, and it's got a lot of aspects to it. But essentially, it's about choice, and it says whenever you choose, you're making a universal choice. Mm-hmm. So if you steal, you are universalizing theft. If you injure or hurt, you're universalizing this. So it's really, if you... kind of degussify it, if you will. It is simply do unto others as you have them do unto you.
I was going to say that, yeah.
Kind of golden rule-ish. Anyway, so this woman, Julie, I don't know what town she's from. How come I don't have... Oh, wait a minute. There you go. A little spit separated the pages. Sorry
about
that.
She didn't appreciate
it. She didn't appreciate it. And it wasn't. And it wasn't on this one. This also airs on other greater media stations, on the other two that greater media owns. And so she wrote into the morning host of the other, one of the other stations, and she said, this morning I woke up to a program where a man wrote a book about living without God. Is this the kind of thing you promote? The interviewer was going along with everything he said and how much sense it made, etc. I'm amazed at what I heard. Not even promoting different religions, which is acceptable, but to promote atheism. I want to ask you about this before I decide never to listen to the show again. Truly appalling. She's talking about my show. And then Julie writes, I'm sorry I have to cut this short. I'm up early to take my son to his hockey game where God has given him his talents. All right? So I wrote back what you would expect. Your message was forwarded to me. I'm sorry you took offense, blah, blah, blah. My intent is to inform and at times challenge people by the opinions expressed on the show, yada, yada. They never represent the station or its advertiser and on. But, you know, I mean, I mean this, but it's kind of boilerplate. If you write me, rather than tattling to the program directors who aren't affected by this, I mean, this show is very, very popular. Its podcasts are number one on the stations and all that. In fact, you can get the podcast. Go to WRIF.com. There'll be the current podcast, today's podcast.
And there's old shows on there, too.
Old shows, yeah.
Shows.
Years, back years, I think. I know it's often uncomfortable for me to hear views that, yeah, so I went on. So she writes back, I appreciate your quick response, and I figured you'd write what you did. But where is this? I pray for Ronald Aronson, the author. You're right. The world is in a period of great change, which I said, but not necessarily for the better. And a godless person is to blame. I mean, I hope she's not blaming me. But anyway, I guess we could argue religion all day. I also, wait a minute. I forgot this one really important part here. This got too many of these things. Oh, man.
You two went back and forth for a couple of days.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, here it is. My issue with your interview, other than your stuttering and bad questions, was that you went on to express your personal opinion and saying that you went along with his ideology. Is that the job of the interviewer or host? Now,
what's the answer to that?
All right, so stuttering, here's what happens when you're... I'm afraid to talk now.
You're usually thinking while
yeah,
you're talking.
Thinking. So you start. Listen to anybody. People that do this 5 days a week on CNN or something like that.
They all have their moments.
Yeah, you start, you stop, you begin to formulate a question or a statement in some way, and you stop. So she says also, let me see, where is the other part? And she says, and keep working on your interviews. I've heard you before and thought I knew why they put you on Sunday at 6 a.m. which is when these...
You're not actually in there.
No. And the deal is, these are rock stations. This is why these shows aren't in the middle of the afternoon or a morning drive or afternoon drive, because it's a rock and roll station here at WRIF, and the other stations are rock and roll as well. So this is public service, as it's called. We have a commitment to the Federal Communications Commission, and so that's that. So I wrote back... Hi, Julie. Your answer isn't exactly filled with Christian charity, but please pray for me to end my stuttering and for a better time slot. Thanks.
I enjoyed the entire exchange.
She had the last word.
She did. You gave it to her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry you felt my email to be less than Christian, but I feel God has you in exactly the right time slot.
Isn't that great? It was a head shaker, you know.
So... God now is a program director as well as a door opener.
Okay, now we know.
Here, there is an article by Dick Cavett called The Wild World Smith of Wasilla. And here is a statement. I mean, this is pretty good column to begin with, but let's see here. He says, what on earth are our underpaid teachers laboring in the vineyards of education supposed to tell students about the following sentence committed by the serial syntax killer from Wasilla High? Here's what Sarah Palin said.
Oh, we're back on Palin again?
Oh, yeah. She says, My concern has been the atrocities there in Darfur and the relevance to me with that issue as we spoke about Africa and some of the countries there that were kind of the people succumbing to the dictators and the corruption of some collapsed government on the continent. The relevance was Alaska's investment in Darfur with some of our permanent fund dollars.
Phew.
Yeah. How did she do that?
Exhausting. Absolutely exhausting.
And she concluded, never, ever did I talk about, well, gee, is it a country or a continent? I just don't know about this issue. And Dick Cavett said, it's admittedly a rare gift to produce a paragraph in which whole clumps of words could be removed without noticeably affecting the sense of it, if any.
Go Dick Cavett.
Is there any more? Okay.
Great article.
Well, she makes some sense about the economy. She said on NBC's Today Show, I think the economic collapse had a heck of a lot to do more with the campaign's collapse than me personally.
Well, okay.
Here's your thoughts.
I think you, Sarah Palin, turned off a lot of Republicans.
Yes, and certainly the Democrats. Oh,
even one Republican we work with, remember?
Well,
admitted that he crossed over.
Really?
Other day.
Can you whisper it? What? Oh, that's right. That's right. It was too
amazing
much.
Stuff there.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm missing one here, and it keeps popping out of my mind. Oh, yeah. Dennis Miller, who used to be kind of funny, but now he's this far right wing talk show host.
Yes. In fact, I think he's on the Fox News, right?
Oh, well, here, this is shows him on Fox. He said, liberal women hate Sarah Palin because, quote, she has a great sex life.
Oh, please.
Now, some of these...
She has to be the ice queen. I mean, okay, she has all these kids, so she's had sex 5 times.
Well, don't underestimate these people, because...
That's true.
Here.
Do we care?
The Republic... Well, I don't even... They're so repressive. Pardon me. You know, here, this damn... That's why I don't like winter as well. Something, just the weather gets cold, and there goes my throat. I don't know what the hell it is. 313-298-WRIF for Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on Night Call. This is from the Raw Story. You can go to rawstory.com. Yeah. The Republican brand is still alive and well, Representative Mike Pence said on Fox News Sunday. When asked by Chris Wallace what conservative solutions the grand old party, the grand GOP,
the grand oil party,
would bring to their current minority party status, Pence said social issues like the sanctity of marriage will remain the backbone of the Republican platform. Now, that's a good idea because, I mean, in a country that's really come to grips with all of its other problems.
Yeah, like the economy and all of that.
And
yeah, all the
infrastructure
wars.
And
yeah.
The poor,
let's focus
medical
on,
care.
On people who love each other.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
But
we're
real
smart.
You know what's so strange when they talk about social issues? I mean, haven't we heard a little bit about the Republicans, about adultery, gay sex, divorce, visiting prostitutes,
ooh,
drug use,
mm-hmm,
drink? I mean, they may be, and this goes back to Sarah Palin and her sex life that Dennis Miller was talking about.
That I, as a liberal woman, am jealous of her because of her sex life.
Well,
you haven't been to my house lately, Sarah Palin.
Well, wait a minute. I guess what I'm saying is that the Republican voters, I hate to say this to many of you, but...
I will have
there
to.
You go.
That was pretty good.
And
I
what did
say.
He say? Upon this church I shall... wait a minute. Upon this rock.
I don't know. You are much more well-versed in religion. I just don't... Bother.
I don't know why. I have Bibles and Korans
I don't go
and
there.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Do I have a Koran? Maybe I don't. Yeah, I don't think I do. I just kind of was trying to be ecumenical. Maybe I do. I don't know. But any event, I do have about 4 or 5 Bibles.
Really?
Well, there's different versions.
And what? Just out of research interest?
Yeah, I don't know. People are always
I know
say,
that you're not reading the good book
no. Well,
when you go home.
There's some pretty, you know, kind of a lot of sex and violence in that Old Testament.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, what are we going to do about the economy? you know, we might just have to put our legs,
put our head between
our legs and kiss our ass goodbye. Thank you. That's the second time tonight I turn things around. Yeah.
What are we doing with our legs?
Yes. You know, I went to this poverty conference, poverty summit down at Cobo Hall, sponsored by the Michigan Department of Human Resources, mm-hmm. Put together by my old pal and now director of the Department of Human Resources, Ishmael Ahmed. Amazing man, absolutely amazing man. And he approached me about it and said he wanted to come on my show and talk about it. And he said they were looking. I said, how many people expect? He said, well, 1,000, maybe 2,000, and I thought, you know, people aren't going to come out for
good
this.
Good luck, right?
Yeah, over 5,000 people
Ooh.
Showed up. This was truly amazing.
And these are people who aren't just, like, working in social workers, things
Both.
Like that.
Okay. It was everybody. There were a lot of poor people there as well.
Really?
And, yeah, and they there was, and this was for Voices for Action. I mean, how are we going to you know, actually move forward out of this. And the only thing, I mean, it was really heartening. I mean, everybody was on spot about the issues. I mean, about the first and foremost, people said their main concern was jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And then, let me see, I can't remember, I don't know if I can remember them all, but it was jobs, health care, education, oh, and housing.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I don't know that, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be defeatist, but I'm not sure that individual initiative, although it's good and people should maintain that, that whether that is going to be sufficient to get us out of the hole, that these people running things, the suits, all the wealthy guys that were always on television saying how wonderful everything is and how this is the best of all possible worlds and our economic system is just the greatest ever devised by human beings. And they were just completely wrong about everything. Now, this could be, any minute could be the bottom of it.
Right.
And hopefully this is it, and it's upward, it's excelsior, upward and onward from here. But I don't think anyone really thinks that. I think one of the interesting things that, what did I bring this? There was a couple of people that have been sending me things, and I did something with them, but I misplaced both of them. One, which is, oh, here we go. Yeah, which is from Clint in Dearborn. And here, today's layoffs, closing, and bankruptcies. This is for one day, he sent, November 14th. And it just lists the remaining 95 workers at TPI Corporation learned their jobs are being moved to Tennessee in the spring. Sun Microsystems says it will cut up to 6,000 workers in Jackson, Michigan. Jonesville's largest employer, SKD Automotive, is shutting down its plant there early next year. It'll affect 300 employees. On and on and on, and all over the world. Royal Bank of Scotland finishing plans to cut 3,000 jobs. The Kenworth Truck Company plans to lay off 400 workers in Seattle. And this doesn't stop. And let me see, was this one here as well? Also, now I'm doing this by memory, but there is, oh, I can't remember his name, and I don't know where I put this, but it's called, he sends me emails that are titled Closed. And this is beginning to spiral downward. This is what I said last week, remember, about how the stock market collapse hit in 1929, but then as there were plant closings and people lost their jobs, which meant people shopped less, and there was less and less consumer dollars spent, and we hit the depths of the Depression. Well, there was supposed to be enough in place that things like this would not even ever happen again. I don't think it's the best radio in the world to read things, but let me go at this. This is pretty long. I think this is worth doing. This is by my old pal, Alexander Coburn, who writes Counterpunch, counterpunch.org, which I would highly recommend. Back in the spring, Republicans used to chortle at the prospect of handing over power to a Democratic president who would promptly be engulfed in recession. This would start, according to their plan, in March of 2009, discredit the new president and prepare the way for a Republican renaissance in 2012, because they knew that that Bush was going down big time. 6 months earlier, the crash swelled up in September, leaving an incumbent Republican president tarred with the same brush of historic failure as Herbert Hoover in 1932. He may mismanage the sequel, But no Republican will be able to claim it was all Obama's fault, although they're doing that already. I mean, these right-wing commentators are, you know, calling it the Obama recession.
Guy's
only been on television. You know who's still president? This man who has a 20% approval rating. 80% of the people understand everything that this guy did. He ruined. Bush is urging the world's leading economic powers, now mustered in Washington, not to give up on capitalism. The mere fact that an American president should feel obliged to issue this worried advisory shows how desperate things already are, and much worse they will soon get. I'm sorry, this scared the hell out of me, and I'm sorry if I'm doing this to you. Each week brings a terrifying lurch. On the Doppler radar, we can see financial storm after financial storm lined up out there. Next to burst, a credit card overhang of some $2.8 trillion in consumers' plastic debt, much of which will have to be written off. The next week after, scores of cities and towns and even states are on the edge of bankruptcy. Mm. This week's storm center has been in the U.S. auto industry effectively bankrupt. In 1952, GM's then chairman, Charles Wilson, said, "What's good for the country is good for General Motors and vice versa." Amid the glorious surge of the post-war auto boom. This week, GM's stock was trading at around $3, and analysts at Deutsche Bank said America's largest industrial corporation, the ninth largest company in the world, is effectively worthless. This is why they're calling for this bailout. Republicans are saying no bailout. You've got yourself into this, and if we give you money, you will just be back for more. Congress seems to be saying bailout is the only for bankers. GM has 266,000 employees. If General Motors goes under, says Alexander Coburn, the ripple effect will put 2.5 million Americans out of work.
Ugh.
Right now there's 500,000, although he says it's, he talks about it here. Drive through any American town and you'll see hundreds of acres of malls and box stores, almost all of them built in the past 20 years. Target, Best Buy, Circuit City, Home Depot, Borders Books, Linens and Things. Each day brings another bankruptcy. Circuit City, Borders went bankrupt?
I did read that, yeah.
Really? Linen and Things have gone. Home Depot is shutting down branches. And then he talks about a number of other places. The U.S. Postal Service, with almost 1 million employees and $2 billion worth of red ink this year, is considering the first layoffs, 40,000 postal workers.
Whoa.
Already, Americans' real unemployment rate, if shorn of statistical tricks designed to conceal bad news, stands at about 15% and is rocketing up. Officially, it's like, 6.9 or something? Consumer spending in the third quarter was the worst in 28 years. As the country totters wanly into what promises to be an appalling holiday sales season, Obama and his advisors gingerly finger the poisoned chalice handed to them by Bush.
Ooh.
That's pretty scary.
Yeah, it sure is.
Obama wants the $50 billion bailout package for the auto industry. The problem with GM and Ford, says Alexander Coburn, is that they will be back for more billions in a few months because their cars aren't selling well. Well, it's not only that. That as people begin to lose their jobs and that the lenders are fearful that that people won't have jobs, they don't want to give out loans very quickly. Right. I think I said it. We were thinking about buying a new car.
Yeah.
And they wanted like 6%, over 6% interest.
Right.
So
yeah.
I thought, well, I'm not. Because why? Because they're afraid, gee, I won't be able to make good on the loan.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
Not me personally, but me. You know, as a
consumer, right.
Let's see. Options for Obama and his future economic team are bleak.
Mm.
We don't like to hear that, do we?
No.
That scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, it really is terribly frightening.
Yeah. Wow. So what do we do? I have no idea. And a lot of the people making the decisions are the same suits that got us into this. I know that make up all those with all those people you fought with in your family and your friends. And
we'll be living all together as one.
Yeah, and your neighbors. But this is the kind of thing that we might wind up if we don't hang together. We're going to hang separately. And I don't think getting together and starting buying cooperatives some of the things that I would suggest doing probably will hurt things more. Like going out and spending a lot now probably is not a real good idea unless you have the cash in hand that makes some sense to do it. Borrowing more That seems to me to be a terrible idea. But if people don't do that, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, that I think it's still on my website at peterwerby.com. I mean, capitalism has these phases. One is the first and foremost, when there's a period of prosperity, is looting. So the whole continents are looted. People's the wealth that is created from people's our labor is looted. Slaves are looted from Africa, on and on and on like that. So and it's sort of the wheel of misfortune, or the wheel of fortune, if you like a more positive thing. So some areas and some classes and some races do real well. Others live in abject misery. And what happens frequently is that kind of, you know, kind of drifts around. So what's it say in the Bible? Those that are last will one day be first.
Mm.
You think, I know my Bible.
Yeah, you know your Bible.
So you can't even tell where the on the wheel of misfortune, where you or we are going to wind up on it. So number one is looting, and then there's the period of collapse, which ushers in the concomitant aspect of it, which is blackmail. So it's like, and during normal times, they say, well, either you have to take a cut in your wages, or we're going to take your business, our firm, off to Indonesia. So then, you know, you're required, and, you know, you don't want to do that. And now it's the same thing. We don't want to give General Motors our tax dollars because how they've screwed up so badly. But what's the option? What's the alternative? They have us over a barrel. They always have us over a barrel. They're always, you know, we're always outnumbered, always outgunned because we're going after them. Well, we're not even going after them. They're always practicing class warfare. We never are. And the idea that as ordinary American citizens, below the ultra-wealthy and the rich and the very rich in this country, that we're just these scattered little atoms in this world, whereas they are highly organized. I mean, they usually have every government working for them. They control the banks. They control finance. You say, well, how can we stand up to that? How can I, as an individual? Well, it's been done in the past. I've said any number of times, we, the people, have changed history. And when we get into motion, they respond. They don't want to give up their power. They never want power to the people, as John Lennon sang the song that introduces this program every week. So then they'll go, oh yeah, all right, here, yeah, we'll do this. In fact, we'll do almost anything, including even giving up a lot of our power or letting different groups of people in to share in it that never were allowed before. But right now, we're just hoping. And forgetting about the title of Barack Obama's book about the audacity of hope, hoping gets us nowhere. They're practicing class warfare. We're doing nothing. And the casualties are all on our side. All on our side, aren't they? They're not taking any casualties. And what they want is to inflict more casualties on us by taking our money to save the businesses that they've ruined, rather than using that money for what we really need, something like universal single-payer health care, which, for one thing, I never understood. If General Motors didn't have these obligations in health care for mm-hmm. both their current workers and retirees, and also for pensions, if that was like government responsibility, wouldn't they have a lot more money? They can't even do what's in their best interest. Well, we better find out what's in our best interest. All right, your thoughts. Should General Motors get a bailout, for instance? Maybe just start with that. Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan, we're at 313-298-WRIF.
That's 313-298-9743.
And we are back.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this. Home of WRIF.com. Get the latest rock news, concert listings, and where Riff is rocking the streets. Check out Motor City's Deals and Deals and get stuff for half price. Or your 101 The Riff online from anywhere in the world.
Website
worldwide. 101 WRIF and WRIF.com. Everything that rocks.
What could be the biggest financial setback of your life? It's not losing a bet or making a bad investment. It's bankruptcy. And if you have too much credit card debt, you may be closer than you ever imagined. If you have over $12,000 in credit card debt, call an advocate who understands debt problems and how to fix them. Your advocate is Debt Settlement USA. Call for a free consultation at 1-877-560-8877. Debt Settlement USA has a proven debt reduction program that can cut the amount you owe and get you out of debt faster than you could on your own. If you have over $12,000 in credit card debt, call Debt Settlement USA for a free consultation. 1-877-560-8877. Your call is confidential with no obligation. Not available in all states. Debt Settlement USA can help you get out of debt faster than you think. Call now. 1-877-560-8877. That's 1-877-560-8877.
How would you like to lose weight for free? Hi, I'm Steve Bostick for Right Size Smoothies.
And I'm Scott Johnson. For a few months now, we've offered an incredible deal to the public. Use Right Size Free for 2 full weeks and see how much weight you can lose before you pay for them.
But some of you haven't called, so we're offering one last chance to take advantage of this popular offer. These people called.
I lost weight within a couple days. Now I'm down 120 pounds.
A free trial sounded like a no-brainer, so I called. Within the first week, I'd lost a lot of weight.
I knew within a few days I finally found the answer. I've lost 44 pounds.
Right Size Smoothies contain an appetite manager that knocks out hunger cold. You'll see results early, so you'll know you can do it.
How much weight can you lose in 2 weeks? Try Right Size Free and find out. You could be our next testimonial.
For your free 2-week trial, call 1-800-644-1381. 1-800-644-1381. 1-800-644-1381.
The following is not a radio commercial. It's a gift from the people of Iceland to you and to your heart. You see, Iceland Health is giving away a free bottle of omega-3 fish oil to everyone who requests one because they recognize the very real danger of high cholesterol, heart disease, and stroke.
As a result of taking Iceland Health, my blood pressure has dropped tremendously.
Iceland Health omega-3s offer more than just protection for your heart. They have powerful benefits for joints, memory, even your skin. And the omega-3s from Iceland Health offer twice the power of ordinary fish oil.
I feel more flexible, and I feel like my energy is up.
Iceland Health omega-3 made me feel 100% better.
Call now to request your free bottle of Iceland Health Omega 3 soft gels. 1-800-574-9485. It's our gift to you. 1-800-574-9485. 1-800-574-9485.
Imagine having the money for liposuction, a nose job, or tummy tuck. Well, now you can get the cosmetic procedure you want from an independent board-certified surgeon, all for less than you think. That's right. The independent board-certified surgeons managed by Doctors Say Yes are making cosmetic procedures affordable to everyone. Now you can afford the treatment you want with financing guaranteed, no matter what your credit looks like. If you've been thinking about becoming the perfect you, just call Doctors Say Yes at 1-866-495-8189. Their independent board-certified surgeons have assisted over 30,000 people, and they can help you afford the cosmetic procedure you've always wanted. Call Doctors Say Yes for your free consultation. Call 1-866-495-8189. Your call is confidential with no obligation. Call 1-866-495-8189. That's 1-866-495-8189.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. And Jillian Jordan is here with me in the WRIF studios. Our email address is calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And anything from anybody that we...
Yes, we have Anu listening in Tennessee. Tell Peter we're listening. It's Viva, Change, and Anu. Talk about the car companies.
Well, yeah. Well, hey, a big shout out to our Tennessee contingent. We're bad. We're nationwide, as ZZ Top sings. Well, two top Republican senators said Sunday they will oppose a Democratic plan to bail out Detroit automakers, calling the U.S. industry a dinosaur whose, quote, day of reckoning is coming. Their opposition raises serious doubts about whether the plan will pass in this week's post-election session. I don't know. It's just like, what, 51-49 in terms of in the Senate. Democratic leaders want to use $25 billion of the $700 billion financial industry bailout to help General Motors, Ford Motor, and Chrysler. Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama said an auto bailout would only postpone the industry's demise. Let's see here. And he said also the financial situation facing the big three is not a national problem, but their own problem, he said. And in the current environment, according to Bob Herbert in the New York Times today, one or more of the big three going bankrupt would be like, offering up your nose to Sweeney Todd despite your face, you know, cutting off your nose despite your face.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just General Motors or Chrysler or Ford. The U.S. auto industry is the cornerstone of American manufacturing. It supports millions of jobs directly or indirectly in a vast array of businesses. Start with thousands of parts in each vehicle. They are produced by suppliers across the country from one coast to the other. Those supplies have to be manufactured, packaged, and transported. Truck drivers, rail systems, and shipping companies are involved. And, of course, there are dealers everywhere. And the auto repair industry and the insurance industry and vast systems of advertising supporting every kind of job you can imagine, from messengers to accountants to filmmakers and beyond, all of that advertising funnels absolutely crucial revenues to television, magazines, newspapers, you name it. If GM, which is on life support, or Ford or Chrysler, were to go bankrupt, the reverberations would kill the jobs of entire armies of American workers. It would undermine the standard of living of hundreds of thousands of families and shutter the entrances of untold numbers of small and intermediate businesses. So that seems to close down the argument, right? You got to bail them out. But how in the world do we deal with what these Republicans say, that the day of reckoning is coming and all this $25 billion will hold off the day when they come back and say, we need more money? So, yeah, you know, actually, there was something, I don't know if I have this quote from Bush somewhere or other, where he's saying, yeah, I used to be for the free market. You know, he said things were different. I heard this Republican, or not even, I mean, I guess he's a Republican, this right-wing moron. He must be buying time on this right-wing talk station in Detroit.
Oh, okay.
Where he was saying, we have to stick with the free market, you know.
I'm glad I didn't hear it.
I can't believe it. All right, let's just take these in order, although I can't, I'm hoping these are cool to take, although the unfortunately on our computer doesn't show who they are or where they're calling from. Let's give it a whirl. What the hell? Hi, this is Peter and Jolene. You're on WRIF. Who's this?
This is Pat.
Where are you calling from, Pat?
St. Clair.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, this is Pat from St. Clair. How are you guys doing?
We are doing great, Pat, and thank you for calling. What's up?
Not too much. First of all, I'd like to say that according to the auto companies, let them pay the piper. No, you can only...
But that's the problem. They can't.
You're saying let them go down.
Yeah, if you can't pay the piper, then you can't pay them, and the piper's going to come back to bite you on the ass.
Well, I'll tell you, Pat, that's one thing that people have said. Why isn't the government bailing out Circuit City? I mean, what are those workers any less worthwhile?
Right.
Yeah, or
exactly. You know what? You know what? I'm glad that Circuit City is going down because I can go buy my my converter box for my TV.
There you go. Now then you'll get all those HD channels. All right. Thank you, Pat. Filled with compassion. Let's see. Here is Ted, who's in Ann Arbor. Hi, Ted. Thanks for joining us on WRIF.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Jolene. How are you?
Great. I'm great. How are you doing?
We're
both great.
I tuned in a little late tonight. I'm a long-time listener. I didn't get home in time to... I was listening on the way home, but I wasn't very far away. So I just caught the tail end of what you were talking about. I guess I more or less have a comment. I wasn't very politically active until about 3 years ago, really. My life, I'm 37 years old. I really couldn't care less about it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's a shame, because I felt like one voice. What can I really, you know, I've disagreed with the politics. I've disagreed with our government for a long, long time. And I've read a lot. I'm educated, you know. I mean, I have a 4-year degree from University of Michigan. I came here to go to school, and I ended up staying here. And I guess really my comment is, you guys are right on spot for the first time. I disagree with a lot of
for the first time?
Well, I'm saying in
40 years?
I'm saying in my view. I've listened for probably 20 years, but I'm saying in where I can actually say, you know what, I agree with you guys 100%. My views are exactly the same. They are instituting class warfare in this country. And people in this country really do need to wake up. They have us believing that a handful of men, terrorists as they call them, changed the entire world in one day. Yet 300 million Americans cannot change their own destiny, cannot change their own direction. That's ridiculous.
That's interesting.
People need to wake up in this country, and they really need to know who's in control. They need to know why they're in control. And let me ask you this, and this is just a question, then I'll go, and if you want to talk about it, you can. If not, then where does the money come from, Peter? They borrowed $700 billion from a private entity that prints money, that just produced money. And we're on the hook for that. What if the entire country, and I know this is very hard to believe, but what if the citizens of this country, because certainly they're going to have a lot of UAW workers behind them, they're going to have a lot of union officials behind them, if they decide to say, you know what, we're not paying our taxes, now what? We're going to put that money back into our own local communities, and we're going to be done with the Federal Reserve and the IRS system. I know you guys are anti-Ron Paul, and I don't believe in a lot of Ron Paul's views, but Ron Paul, when it comes to the economy, is a very astute man. And if you listen to what he has to say, he firmly believes that this country could exist if we pull our military back, and if we concentrate on taking care of this country, and we get these people out of our government.
Well, certainly, I've said that in the past. I mean, one of the things that nobody talks about is the 10,000-pound elephant in, or what is it? No, I guess it's the 800-pound gorilla. I don't want to get too much weight there. 800-pound gorilla in the living room that nobody wants to really talk about, and that's the swollen war budget that is part of the dead center of the American economy, the military-industrial complex. And as long as everyone gives obeisance to that, says, yes, we have to maintain it. The New York Times today came out for an expansion of the military for almost 100,000 more troops, talking about wars that are going to be fought in the future. None of this is necessary. None of this has to be. I mean, the military right now, the military budget is more than the entire, our military budget is more than the entire military budget of every other country in the world combined. I mean, this is absolutely insane. So certainly, I agree with Ron Paul completely about that. But no one dares to take that on, and the fear will be, for instance, if Barack Obama said, "Okay, like Ron," say he said, "I agree with Ron Paul. We're going to bring those at least most of those bases from overseas, or all of them, 700 bases. That's what Ron Paul wanted, and I agree with that. And that's what Dennis Kucinich from the Democrats said as well." And then somebody let off a firecracker and burnt somebody's hand, they would be blaming Barack Obama for allowing terrorism to occur. Obviously, you know, behind what I'm saying is some event that could be a lot bigger than that. But you're not fighting terrorism by having bases all around the world. That's not what we need. We need security here at home to deal with that. And we need to create a foreign policy that doesn't make people hate us, that doesn't allow for a recruiting mechanism for those that would do the kind of damage that's been done to us here in this country and abroad. But is Barack Obama going to take that on? I really don't know. Well, thanks for agreeing with us this time.
What?
Thanks, Ted. Yeah. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Here's Bill. Bill's in Troy. Thanks, Bill, for joining us. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good evening, Pete. Good evening, Jolene. How you guys doing?
Good.
Great.
And I was listening in, and we were just talking about the GM crisis this evening at work. And your opinion, maybe I didn't hear it, but maybe you can tell me, if the Big Three did, if it was not approved, the $700 billion for the Big Three, you know, is that something that you think that the economy needs, is for these companies to, you know, for a trickle effect of a recession, depression to start to occur, to really put the economy back in line for the cost of living?
Well, what's really fearful to me, Bill, is that even if the bailout is granted, and that doesn't work, and they do come back for more, that it still won't work. I mean, people have to buy cars, and if we have other parts of the economy that are spiraling downward, and people are getting more and more layoffs, and people are defaulting on more and more auto loans that are already out there, and they're expecting this massive default on credit card loans, and the lenders will not give out loans that are attractive to people. 6% of your an interest rate is not exactly what encourages people to buy. It might happen even if we bail them out. I guess I lean towards bail them out. When I read it's something like I did from the New York Times about the ripple effect this would have, about the 2.5 million more jobs losses, what I think the official rate is like 500,000, and as Alexander Coburn says at counterpunch.org, it's probably three times that when you look at the real figures, when you get by everything that they use to diminish the figure. So, I don't know. I don't know if anything will work. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Here is Mark. Mark is in St. Clair. Hi, Mark. It's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, good evening. How are you doing?
And I know that the ferry from, goes to Marine City, I was saying last week to somebody from St. Clair. But, yeah, it goes from Sombra to Marine City, right?
Actually, I'm from St. Clair Shores, not St. Clair.
No. Oh, okay.
All right.
There's a difference.
You're probably thinking, what the hell is this guy talking about?
Not talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah, go ahead.
St. Clair. I guess I have one comment to make. We keep saying the word bailout, and, you know, I can't speak for GM or Chrysler. I'm a Ford Motor Company employee, and what Alan Mulally has told us is that we're looking for a loan.
Right.
We're looking for help to get us through a situation that we really didn't cause. So, I mean, we should, we're not asking just for money that we're not going to pay back.
No, I hear you. And Chrysler did that in, when was that, the late 70s or something, or the 80s? I forgot.
Yeah, like 79 or 80.
79, yeah, it was. Yeah, and it is a loan. I mean, the fear is that in the economic conditions that prevail now, that it ain't going to work. I mean, they're burning through the cash. GM is, certainly.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I guess the other comment I wanted to make is that, you know, assuming we do get through these tough times, you know, we believe that we're right-sizing our company right now, and that we've got the products in the pipeline that we can hopefully get on the road that'll help us be profitable.
Now, the only problem is that I just went by my local gas station. It's $1.89 a gallon. Mm-hmm. People can say, yeah, bring on the F-150s. Where's my Hummer?
Yeah. No, I can understand that, but that logic, I think, is no longer, it's not what we're thinking anymore. We want to have a more balanced portfolio. We want to have the trucks for the people that need them, you know, the construction workers, whatnot. But
sure.
We also have in the pipeline family-sized vehicles that will get good fuel economy. We've got new engine technologies. We're working on all sorts of things that will help us balance our portfolio.
Well, right now, I think that we have to submit to what is essentially blackmail. We do have you and me and the other taxpayers listening have to loan General Motors this money. I don't think there's any other option. Will it work? I don't know whether it'll work or not, but to say right now, the hell with them and let them go bankrupt, and the effect that this would have is, I think, more than we could deal with right now.
Yeah, and we're getting a lot of emails about this, and it seems to be...
Thank you. Appreciate your call.
More saying don't bail them out.
Well, I can kind of... I can fully understand that sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are so angry about what has been done to us by these economic elites that always told us that they were so smart, we were so dumb. You just do your job, just turn the bolt or, you know, hit the computer button, and we'll take care of you. And we'll take more and more of the money for ourselves. And it's worked out terribly. And they're not suggesting anything, because they're essentially, I would say our last caller was saying that there is some attempt at a different management initiative. So that's good. I mean, let's just hope. Are any of the emails quickly readable?
Well, TJ in Ann Arbor says he doesn't think that GM should get the bailout. I'm sick of seeing all those bailouts for companies that closed their eyes to the problems long ago. That's what he says.
Yep. All right, here is Dan in Rockwood. Dan, it's Peter
and
Jillian.
How are you doing?
We're doing good. What's up?
Oh, not much. I just think about all that stuff about Obama going on. I think it's actually good of him being president because I think America deserves a change.
Sure, I guess the majority of people agreed with that.
Yeah, because actually between when Bush was president and all that about the people going down to Iraq and everything, my option is I think he's telling them to go down there and stay down there and they end up getting killed. So my thinking is if Obama's president, stuff like that, he'll tell them to go down to Iraq, get everything done, come back home.
Well, it is unclear exactly what Obama is going to do. I mean, he's sort of been all over the board. Right now, there was just approved by the Iraqi ministers. I think that we're going to stay there till 2011. You know, we don't pay any attention to that anymore. And I even have on my website, Dan, I had the American debt. And the figure would be too big to put on my website for the Iraqi debt and the civilians mainly. So between now and 2011, a lot of Americans are going to lose their lives. I mean, I would be for just out of there right away. Another thing I agree with Ron Paul with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate your call there. Let me see how many. Well, we can do this just a little bit early. We'll be back with our second hour. Peter Werby, Jalene Jordan, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
This is Night Call. On 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
All right, $9 million.
All of you who have stuck with me.
Divided by 900,000 citizens.
Through very difficult times.
$10 a head. Now, you're not getting much more out of these guys.
I'm sorry.
Good thing you can still text message us at the RIF. Get your request, concert info, and your unfair cellular advantage. Text keyword WRIF to 71913. And,
I'm sorry.
We'll never be embarrassed to hear from you.
I would never quit on you.
Log on to WRIF.com for more details. 101 WRIF.
My phone blown up.
Do you work on your feet every day? Or maybe someone you love does? Well, if you do, then you know how important properly fitted and comfortable footwear is. And right now, you can save $20 on a pair of work boots at Red Wing Shoes in Livonia or Roseville. Get a pair of high-quality, properly fitted boots at Red Wing Shoes and save $20. Just find the ad here on WRIF.com. Print a copy and use it at Red Wing Shoes in Livonia or Roseville. Red Wing Shoes. Built to fit. Built to last.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and we want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new MKS, the MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. You can check out our vehicle inventory on the site, and you can bet that if you don't see what you're looking for, we can surely find it for you. Experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood and Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com. That's DEMMER.com.
Experience the Demmer difference. Right now at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury, lease a 2009 Lincoln MKS for $379 a month. Based on an AZ plan with Ford Lincoln Mercury lease renewal and $1,969 down plus tax. See dealer for details or check them out on the web at Demmer.com.
Your credit card debt is getting out of control. You're having trouble making the monthly minimums. Sound familiar? You have to do something, but what? Well, you don't have to file for bankruptcy. The mortgage brokers want you to put up your family home to pay off credit card debts. Problem is that more often than not, you find yourself using the credit cards again. Only this time there's no equity left in your home, and you have a whole new pile of credit card debt. It doesn't have to be this way. We're Credit Card Relief. We help people just like you get out of debt in months instead of years and save you thousands of dollars. Call now for a free consultation. We're an attorney-driven program with an excellent reputation. The consultation is free and the relief is real.
Call 1-866-290-8282. 1-866-290-8282. Not available in all states. 1-866-290-8282.
Are you in sales or do you own your own business? If so, I want you to think of a number.
Think of the amount of money you'd like to make this year. Do you have it? Okay, so what's stopping you? It's not your drive. It's not your skills. Chances are it's your ability to find new leads. It's not easy. But what if someone had already done the work for you? What if with one phone call you could get your hands on as many new sales leads as you could handle and actually make that number you have in your head? It's not too good to be true. It's Sales Genie, the largest provider of the most up-to-date sales leads mailing lists and business credit reports. And they want to give you 100 sales leads absolutely free. No matter what you're selling or who you're selling to, Sales Genie has the sales leads and mailing lists you need. And right now, they'll give you 100 sales leads absolutely free. Call Sales Genie at 1-800-996-3695 and get 100 sales leads for free. Call 1-800-996-3695. 1-800-996-3695.
101.1 WRIF, WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Jolene Jordan is with me, and our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. We have a MySpace page, myspace.com/nightcallshow. We also have a Facebook page, and actually don't have the URL on that, but we will very soon. There'll be a podcast.
Just search it. Search it. Facebook, yeah. If you're on there.
There will be, and do you get friends on Facebook? I have no
you
idea.
You do.
Yeah.
You do. We come and be our friends.
I don't understand all that, but who cares?
Yeah.
I got enough to do. If I spend any more time on the internet, my wife will kill me, and my eyes will, I won't be able to do it.
That your eyes will be it. Unhappy with
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Podcast of this program available by noon. If I hold
tomorrow.
Up. Yeah, tomorrow, because we still have about.
Oh, I see.
Almost today. 50 seconds left of Sunday. At 1 a.m. Eastern time, I'm going to be interviewing syndicated columnist Norman Solomon, our pal.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even tell you that, did I? He says Barack Obama has a mandate for, you ready for this? Spreading the wealth through increased government spending on social programs, social programs and infrastructure construction, which would pump billions of dollars back into the economy by creating jobs, eh? And also then Robert Kuttner, who is the author of a book called Obama's Challenge, America's Economic Crisis and the Power of a Transformative Presidency. But he says what I've been saying, actually with the same analogy, that Barack Obama is either, if he's not Roosevelt, as Roosevelt began in 1933, he will then be Herbert Hoover, who was clueless of how to deal with the depression that he presided over. All right, let's see. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. And let's see. Here is Joe. Joe's in Monroe, the home of Fermi 2 and of General George Custer. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, Peter?
Yeah, Joe. Hi.
Good. Hey, how's it going?
We're good.
Hey, I want to touch on one point. Everybody's, all ticked off at NIC for having their Christmas music on early, but you know what? I've got my Christmas tree up early.
Really? Is it a natural one? Is it an evergreen green one?
I'm sitting, no, it's actually plastic. But I gotta tell you. It feels nice to sit back and look at it because it looks nice and it makes me feel better. And
why don't you leave it up all year? What
yeah,
the hell?
Just do that.
Like, you know what? I did that like a year ago. I left it up till like June.
We have Christmas trees here in our hub that's in between all of the radio stations, and we actually have a videotape of a fireplace going.
Yeah.
24/7.
Oh, just warms you right to your core.
I go to sit there and I just feel so good.
It warms the cockles of your soul.
Yes.
Yes.
It does. All right. Well, let's put the X back in Christmas. Or isn't that what do they say? Drive things backwards again?
I think it's the Christ back in Christmas.
Oh, all right. Okay. Joe, all right. A Merry Christmas to you. Early, you're the first person. In fact, you may be the only person I will say that to, but what the hell? Here is Peter in Livingston. This is Peter at WRF and Jolene Jordan. Hi. Hey, Peter.
Hello?
Yeah,
hi.
You're on the air.
Hi, not Livingstone, Leamington.
Oh, Leamington. Leamington, Ontario.
Yep.
Well, thanks for making our program international.
No problem. You had a caller, I guess it'd be about maybe 15 minutes ago, who was talking about the Federal Reserve real quickly.
Sure.
I was wondering if you guys have ever heard of the movie Zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist, yeah.
Yeah, Brian from Milford wants to talk about that as well. Yeah. You know,
yeah,
go ahead.
He just brought up a bunch of points that were made in that movie that it just reminded me. I was wondering if you guys have seen it and had any opinions on what's said in that movie.
Well, here's what I think about it. Here's what I think. This is more general. I think when you're considering very complex subjects about the economy, about history, about politics, that a video is probably the worst possible medium through which to gain any understanding of it. Because the movies, well, I mean, books are crafted in terms of how they present their information, and people have been fooled by, and I'm not saying that Zeitgeist is completely set up to fool people. Essentially, it is a right-wing film, and if you go really deep into the links that are on the site that Zeitgeist is all about, you find some pretty objectionable ones. The idea that somehow that this country was, being the U.S., was this wonderful land of happiness and economic prosperity, and everybody got along up until, what is it? Is it 1912? Is that when the Federal Reserve came in?
It was something around there.
Yeah, something around there. There had just been a big bank panic, and some people say engineered, which could conceivably be. But there was these horrible depressions, like in the 1890s. The conditions that people had to labor under were awful, just beyond belief. You know, 12, 14 hours, 6 days a week, regular shift, child labor, no product safety, all of this stuff. So one of the things that the leading capitalist wanted to do was to stop these huge dips in you know, the economy of this prosperity and then collapse and what have you. Well, I guess it didn't work very well because in 1929, which would be, well, I can't do the math here, just a few years later, if it was 1912, it would be 17 years later, there was 1929. The idea, let me just say this. I'm not trying to defend the Federal Reserve System or how it functions or the fact that it just prints money with nothing in back of it, but rather to say that everything that we're facing is a result of the manipulation of the currency leads me to call these people money nuts. That they're just nuts about the money, that somehow that the whole center of human existence comes around about what money is backed up with and who controls it and all of that. And who controls the finances gets into the real ugly part of this Zeitgeist film. And it's not real evident, which is good because it has a dishonorable past. All right, Peter, thanks for joining us all the way from Leamington. You ever been in Leamington?
I haven't. I've been invited to Leamington.
Really?
Well, yes.
It's not quite the same.
I know, but I'd love to go.
Essex County, which, you know, folks, if you're listening somewhere other than this area here in Detroit, it's weird because we go south to go to Canada.
Very strange.
Yeah, because kind of Essex County kind of goes underneath the Detroit area in Lake Erie. And if you go to Leamington, that's where, right near Point Pelee, right? Yeah. And Point Pelee is the southernmost part of Canada. And in fact, it's Point Pelee. It's right at the point. And it looks like Essex County looks like the United States with Florida being Point Pelee.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well,
thank you, Peter.
I bet you found that absolutely fascinating.
Fascinating,
absolutely. I'm glad I can fascinate. Well, let's see if Brian from Milford has anything to add about the film Zeitgeist. Hey, Brian, it's Peter and Jolene. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thank you for taking my call. And really, you guys covered a great point of what the movie was about. I just wanted to – I hate being on the radio.
It pays my bills.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, man. And I'm at work right now paying my bills. Where I hate working midnight shift, but, hey, it gets you more money. But I always wanted to tell people about that Zeitgeist movie. If they haven't seen it, you know, go and check it out. It's easy. You easily download it on the internet, you know, let people make their own decisions. It has some good points and has some other bad points. Because the first part of the movie is about religion, and I totally believe in God, and they totally, like, pick apart that whole, you know, stuff about that or about religion, and I don't really like it. And if there was any way to get rid of it, I would. But the rest of the film, you know, it has some really good points about how our government
gets all this money on loan, and the reason we pay taxes is to pay back all these loans that the government has taken out for the money. And
I agree with you, but you know, other countries, well, they have central banks essentially function in the same manner. But Zeitgeist means in German, just like Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, means advertising. Mm-hmm. Zeitgeist means spirit of the times, which I can't remember from the movie how that exactly fits in. And I'm trying to remember, is it like, Brian, you got the spelling there? Is it like Z-E-I-T?
G-I-E-S-T, Zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist. Okay, all right. It's like I say, I think if you want to learn about how the economy functions, that's probably not the best place, although, you know, it's a compelling little film, I have to say. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. More from Andy in Westland. Hi, Andy. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. I just escaping out in the garage here. My wife seems to have every single radio in the house set to NIC, so I'm being tortured by the Christmas music in the house. And the only way I can escape it is come out here working on the wheels out in the garage. It's a nice break from the daily grind.
Now, you know what, hey, Andy, before you even start, I meant to start asking people, are you currently employed?
Yes, I am.
And are you worried at all?
Yeah,
I guess we all are. Maybe that's a dumb question. I don't think there's anybody that's going to say, oh, no, I'm not.
Well, I am a third-generation auto worker. It was my grandfather started off working at the old Highland Park $5-a-day plant when he was 14 years old, lied on his job application, and he eventually went to Ford Motor Companies and he retired as a purchaser. Off Ford, went over to T2. I started working in the auto in 1998, so I've got about 10 years of experience in there. I've worked from pretty much every aspect of the auto industry in the Detroit area. I've worked for domestic suppliers. I had a short stay working at General Motors, and I'm actually now employed by a German supplier. And you see the problems every day, and there's definitely a tension in the air. We do a lot of business with Chrysler right now, and it's an awkward position because up until now, it was always seen as the OEM was the top level. And, you know, that was the big leagues. That was a major league. If you made it into the OEM, you were doing good. But now I'll have a weekly meeting up at Chrysler, and I'm having our Chrysler engineers come up to me and say, hey, are you guys hiring? Are you looking for work? Are you looking for engineers? And there's a lot of discussion with a lot of online communities across the nation, and I don't think people quite grasp how deep the vein of the auto industry runs in America. I read somewhere where one in four people who get a paycheck in America are some way, shape, or form affected by the auto industry.
Well, yeah, of course, because, I mean, this is maybe a ludicrous example, but the bar across the street from an auto plant, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, and a lot of it is a little more intricately involved and woven into the whole fabric of the economy. Yeah, it's the central engine of American industrialism, and we've been losing that more and more and more. Some of the people that don't want the bailout, for instance, say, let it go down. Some of the brands that are worthwhile, I mean, so, you know, like Buick and some of them, maybe even Chrysler, but say if there are brands that are worthwhile, those will be picked up by other enterprises. But I think that it would be real, real ugly if General Motors goes down.
Yeah, and the other aspect I see is the people who are crying that let them go down, it kind of reminds me of the analogy I tell people is like a 7 or 8 year old child who mommy and daddy sent them to bed early. So they're saying, mommy and daddy are mean. I wish they were dead. I wish they'd die. And then the next day their wish is granted. And it's like, congratulations, you're an 8 year old boy and your parents are dead. Now what?
Well, I don't know. I wonder what's going to happen. I mean, it doesn't look like the Senate is going to be able to pass a bill. We'll just have to see. All right, thank you so much. I appreciate it, Andy. Thanks for having joined us. A couple open lines at 313-298-WRIF. It's Dan in Madison Heights. Hi, Dan. Thanks for joining me and joining. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Good.
Listen, I worked in the display business for all the big three.
Uh-huh.
And, like, back in 78, 79, we did a thing for the towers that they had. General Motors had a big thing there. And they, so you have all these charts and stuff like that. It showed all the companies that they had back then, at 78, 79. How many companies they have overseas. That was then. Now, you can imagine what there is now. That's not just, we're talking about big conglomerates to manufacture. So that money now, that money there goes to an account on some small island so they don't have to pay taxes here. Now, where's all that money going? It's not coming back into back into the system.
Yeah.
So they're crying about money, and I don't care what they say. I mean, you can't shut them down. That's absolutely, you can't do that. But that's just one, that's just say General Motors and Fords and Chryslers, all of them. Because
They weren't the ones that that got hurt. A few of them did. Yeah, we always had these. Jumped out of windows in 1929. Well, maybe they did, and I'll bet you if there were people that committed suicide, there was as a result of the not being able to meet their financial obligations. They were pretty few and far between, and kind of act as what do you call that? As just almost a cliche of the period, and yet the most rich people. I mean, there was a song from the period. That I met my $1 million baby in a 5-10 cent store. You ever hear that? It was about the era. I was just reading a thing about this. It was about the heiress to Woolworths. And people were outraged. That was does that even exist anymore, Woolworths?
I don't think so.
What'd you call it? It was like, one time it was called
a dime store.
Well, yeah, a dime store, or five and dime store. Yeah, what was the other one? There was Woolworths and Kresge's.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. And they both went bottom up.
Yeah.
In fact, in Detroit, there was a famous sit-down strike by Woolworth shop girls in downtown Detroit.
Oh, yeah. I think I've either heard you talking about it or...
There was a book called Three Strikes, and there was an account of that. If you ever want some interesting reading, check that out. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. And 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Here is Mike in Waterford. Hi, Mike. It's Peter and Julian. Thanks for joining us on WRIF.
Hey, this is my first time calling. I've never really called in. I, to be honest with you, I don't always agree with what you guys think.
It's okay.
I'd like to just talk about the bailout, and I really, if I can stress this, I understand, I have a concept. I guess I don't have a full understanding. I have a concept of how much this is going to affect. I'm a pizza boy. I know that GM people are who I deliver food to, and if, you know, it affects a lot of things. I understand that. But I just don't really believe that they have any kind of concept to fix it or create some kind of American pride to drive American vehicles or even, you know, the belief that, oh, we're going to make more fuel-efficient cars. I drive past thousands of cars and car lots on my way to work every day, and I see these cars sit there, Mercedes, BMW, whatever, and they just sit there all the way, you know, down to work and back, the same cars day in and day out, and they have no idea how to sell those or get rid of those. Their concept is build new. I really don't get it.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not going to argue with you, Mike. I don't know. Obviously, GM going down would be an absolute disaster. Will a bailout save the day? I certainly couldn't make that argument. I don't know that it would. Both ideas. Well, the idea of collapse frightens me. The idea of a bailout or even a loan angers me. So that's not two good alternatives. We have two bad alternatives.
Now, if you don't mind me asking, what do you think that this government's doing to change? I mean, it seems like they have the same idea. More so, you know, and socialist ideas aside, how is the, I mean, I went to college and now I'm a pizza boy, so I want to know what is this government going to do? They're going to give me more education? I got education. What jobs are they going to provide that are stable and going to help stabilize this economy? I just don't see any realistic.
Well, I would think, it sounds like you've kind of bought into this silly rhetoric of the McCain and Palin campaign that there's something socialist about Barack Obama. Oh, that he would be. Well, that's exactly what we need right now. We need socialist programs. That is socializing the cost. If you figure, you know, it's been tarred, and some of it, understandably, given the experience, for instance, of the authoritarian, the totalitarian socialist countries in Asia and in Europe, it's not a very pleasant model. But other countries in Europe that have socialist programs, for instance, if you socialize the cost of medicine, like, you don't have any health insurance, do you?
No, and I really wish I could.
Well, yeah. I don't think it's not so much. For one thing, I think that there ought to be a minimum wage of like $12 an hour. And secondly, that the government ought to be providing a, like every other industrialized country in the world, provide a national health program for every citizen as a matter of right. And that, for one thing, would take the obligation for all that off of the big car companies. That's costing them billions and billions of dollars. You know how many billions in health care they pay for retirees? And how many workers, living workers or active workers, it takes to provide money to pay the pensions and the health care? I mean, what's wrong with a little socialism here?
No, I'm not saying nothing against socialism. I think there's a lot of good concepts that can be found there. And I think that, you know, listening to you has actually helped me open me up to that, because I was McCain, you know. Anyways, with all that aside, politics of who the one now, I think that some of the socialist programs could work. I don't see them doing enough towards the positive, and I don't see them progressing, taking the next steps. They have concepts, but none of them are actually falling through.
Well, we don't know what Obama's going to do. My fear is that he is going to wind up to be Herbert Hoover. I know that's not real popular to say, because everybody is so exuberant about, not everybody, but half, a little more than half the people that that elected him, that we think he's going to do everything, including discover a cure for cancer. Well, I haven't heard anything that's going to significantly alter. A lot's going to be altered. A lot's going to be altered for the positive. I mean, because no one could be as bad as the hand that that Bush, Cheney, McCain, Palin were about to lay on us for another 4 years. So, to that extent, like, I never told anybody. I don't think so. Did I, Jillian, to vote for Obama, that I thought voting for Obama would solve a lot of problems? I said that voting for McCain and Palin would be an absolute, their presidency would be an absolute disaster, a continuation of the monstrous regime and mm-hmm. the stupid, incompetent decisions that have typified the Bush regime. And that it was up to us, the people, to figure out what in the hell we need and want and move in that regard. And as you define yourself, Mike, as a pizza boy, doesn't look like a pizza boy can have much of an effect in this world, that your low-paid job doesn't appear on the face of it to have much of a future. You say you went to college, so hopefully you have other aspirations that will be met. But we want to create the context where that can be. One of the things, my guest at 1 a.m. Eastern Time, let me see, who goes first on this? I think, the guy that's talking about spreading the wealth. He said we need a higher minimum wage, as I just said, and then we need programs like they had in the 1930s to fix the infrastructure of this country, to create schools that don't have 35 kids in them and the walls are falling down, to fix the roads, to fix the bridges so those don't fall down on us, on and on, like that. That's where the money should be going. That's what do create jobs. People with jobs spend stuff, and that can be taken care of. Unless that's in the works, call it socialist, call it pump priming. There you go. That's not they call it that as well. Call it some old government pump priming and get it out of the military sector, and maybe we could deal with this. All right, thanks, Mike. Good luck on everything. And there's a role for everybody. Hey, we need pizza boys. We need pizza mm-hmm. delivery people. It's right now, who do you respect more? The guy that brings you a nice hot pizza, or the president of General Motors?
Or the president of the United States. I'll take the pizza man.
Yeah. Mike, you got our respect. All right, let's see. Again, making our show international, it's Steve from Windsor. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I'm calling. It's concerning the government bailouts for the big three. I too am an auto worker, and I know for years now, I don't think the bailout's the only solution. For years, companies been asking us as a union to take pay cuts, give up certain benefits. It's been going all across, not just big three, but trickles down to every aspect of the auto industry. And I think it's time that you know, some of the big CEOs take a pay cap instead of, you know, we take a cut and they're getting record payments, you know.
Sure.
It doesn't make sense.
Well, I think at a minimum, you know, probably in the grand scheme of things, we're talking about billions and billions, that cutting their pay down to something maybe like $200,000 a year, and they, say, oh, they wouldn't work for that. You know what? I'm sure that if you've got, actually, Buzz Hargrove isn't the Canadian Auto Workers president anymore, so I don't know who the new guy is.
Ken Lenza.
What is it? Ken?
Ken Lenza.
Ken Lenza.
I'm Ken sure. Lenza.
Okay. Okay, I'm sure that he and lots of other people that are involved in the day-to-day production could suggest somebody that could run the Canadian, Ford of Canada and all of that, that could do a damn good job of managing the company and would be more than happy to do it for $200,000 or $250,000 a year that doesn't need $5 million a year. And the other thing is you just got to stop giving stockholders return on investment until this, of course, they're not going to get any. Now,
yeah.
GM, $3 a share.
Right.
And what is it? Deutsche Bank said it's the GM stock is almost worthless. You work for Ford?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And what's the prospect look over there?
Windsor here, eight years ago, we had an area of 5,000 employees here. We're down to 1,400 right now.
Oh.
1,400 active, and there's about 400 on layoff notice at this time.
Wow.
So it's gone down, but I mean, you see it like you're saying, you see it everywhere. It trickles down to the bars, the coffee shops. Can't wait to see around Christmas. The mall will probably be dead this year.
Well, everybody can work for Casino Windsor.
Well, even they're cutting back.
Are they?
Mm.
Yeah, is that a UA or a CAW shop there?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because I know here in Detroit it's United Auto Workers. All right, thank you very much, Steve. Thank you for that report from Windsor, Ontario, just across the border. Let's see. I always laugh at this. Our old boss, United Auto Workers president Ron Gettelfinger.
Oh yes, yeah. He was.
He probably will blame the problems of the UAW on us. Because we worked for the UAW, we did a nationally syndicated talk show there. But anyway, he said, we have made dramatic changes, and the UAW was applauded for that, but he said, they're not going to give up any more benefits. And I hear these right-wingers saying that it's these union contracts that are the cause of it all. And yeah, and see, they want to turn, this is weird. They want to turn the individual fortunes, literally, of the single worker over to the vagaries of the market, which means instead of the package of that UAW workers have fought for since the 1930s, create a middle class standard of living. That they want to reduce you guys, you women, to minimum wage, because they're probably, particularly when there's a lot of people unemployed, people would be fighting to work for $6-7 an hour in a General Motors plant. By the way, in Windsor, ooh, what is the name of the street? It begins with a D. They have this street that has all of these murals along it. It begins at the Detroit River and then mm-hmm. goes up this street. Drew Line? What is it? Anyway, that has the history of some of the things like this big, what did they do? I think it was over health costs, like in 1945, 1946 in Windsor. And the UAW workers just brought down thousands of cars and parked them in downtown Windsor.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Maybe it is Droulard, something like that. Anyways, Windsorites, pick me up on that little deal. Hey, we're going to take a break. Peter Werby, Jalene Jordan, we'll be right back. 313-298-WRIF. To bail or not to bail, although, remember, it is supposedly a loan.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this. Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Two great shows, matinee and evening, December 21st at the Palace of Auburn Hills. Keep it here to win your free ticket for TSL from your concert station. 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks. What exactly is telemetrics and what does it mean to me?
How does changing light bulbs save me money?
Where are the best places to find organically grown foods?
When will Michigan be seeing an increase in green building?
What are some easy steps my family can take to be more green?
How can my coworkers and I start a recycling program at work?
Got lots of questions on Michigan's green future? Get lots of answers at movingmichiganforward.com. You can also join the discussion. Offer your ideas, suggestions, and advice on how we can all work together to live greener in Michigan. MovingMichiganForward.com, in partnership with Next Energy, is brought to you in part by IBEW Local 58 and NECA Signatory Employers, The Good Food Company, and Charter One.
Got lots of questions on Michigan's green future? Get lots of answers at MovingMichiganForward.com.
MovingMichiganForward.com. Learn, share, grow, make your future green at MovingMichiganForward.com.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing, and we want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new MKS, the MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. You can check out our vehicle inventory on the site, and you can bet that if you don't see what you're looking for, we can surely find it for you. Experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com. That's DEMMER.com.
Experience the Demmer difference. Right now at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury, lease a 2009 Lincoln MKS for $379 a month. Based on an AZ plan with Ford Lincoln Mercury lease renewal and $1,969 down plus tax. See dealer for details or check them out on the web at Demmer.com.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Angeline Jordan with me till 1 a.m. And at 1, I'll be airing a couple of interviews about the economy, about what can be done under the new Barack Obama mandate. In fact, Norman Solomon, the syndicated columnist, says Barack Obama has a mandate for spreading the wealth through increased government spending and social programs and infrastructure construction.
Norman's wonderful.
Yeah.
He really is.
Yeah, I love it.
Got an email, and Debbie suggested, what would happen if the workers took over the auto plants and everyone else was fired, like the CEOs, as part of the bailout? Leave the union workers alone. What do you think? Take care and peace.
Oh. Well, they did do that in 1938, the famous sit-ins where workers occupied the factories, but then they wanted union representation. And the Ford plants in Flint, Henry Ford, who was this whack job, far right-wing anti-Semite, financier of Hitler.
Hitler lover,
yeah. What, you don't believe that? He got the Iron Cross, Hitler's highest medal, in Detroit in 1938.
So
the workers are sitting in his plant in Flint, and he's in Detroit getting a medal from a Nazi emissary.
Oh, yeah, disgusting.
Right before World War II started.
Hey, Peter, Edward has a good idea, or a radical idea, he calls it. Have the countries around the world that our military protects pay the cost of being protected. But what are we protecting? Why are we there anyway, right?
Well, that goes back to this whole thing with the missile deal, or the missile defense system in Europe that the United States wants to put in there. And they're saying that, where is the language
here? Well, Sarkozy's
here?
Not so happy about this. I mean, go down the list, right?
Sarkozy. Yeah. George Bush calls him Sarkozy.
Oh, gosh, I just did what Bush
well,
did.
Well, he didn't do it. He didn't have that hole, you know. Yeah, but
well,
yeah, we can, call
still
him, we can call him Sarkozy. But Defense Secretary Robert Gates said Thursday he suggested that Moscow's latest aggressive rhetoric harkened back to the old Cold War era. Now, Russia is saying that if you put this anti-missile defense in Poland and upgrade the Polish military. We're paying for the military upgrade of the Polish armed forces, and that's because they're going to allow us to put this missile defense system. And we keep saying, we just want to protect Europe from Iranian nuclear missiles. which is totally insane, and the Russians know that this is a move against them. Just like trying to organize the countries on their periphery into NATO is part of this encirclement once again. I mean, it's the United States under George W. Bush that is bringing back the Cold War and Cold War activity.
Didn't they say in Russia, the leaders, that they're going to wait for Barack Obama to get into office before they even mess with this anymore? Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing, though, that Barack Obama probably is going to have to choose his battles very carefully. So if he starts, like, immediately saying, well, we're never going to erect this missile defense system in Europe. The United States erecting a missile defense system on the Russian border, this is pure insanity, besides costing us billions of dollars. In fact, if we didn't do this, there'd be the money for the bailout, probably. Also, Russian President Dmitry Medvedev plans to travel this month to Cuba and Venezuela, which have increasing military and trade ties with Moscow. The U.S. has objected to Russia's greater links with the two countries that have antagonistic relations with Washington. Now, let's say that there is some justification for this. Why does this country have military relations with a country that the United States has, you know, fostered this antagonistic relationship 90 miles from our border, Cuba or Venezuela down in, you know, right top of South America? Well, the first question would be, why is the United States doing that to Russia of trying to, as I just said, trying to get countries on the periphery of Russia, like Georgia and Ukraine, into NATO? NATO, hello, what does that stand for? North Atlantic Treaty Organization. They're not on the North Atlantic. This is simply picking a fight with Russia. And here's the trajectory of capitalism. And this is the way it's been time after time. Prosperity, collapse, war, reconstruction. Prosperity, collapse, well, we're there now. War, these are the seeds of it. Then everything gets destroyed, and then we rebuild it, and there's the military-industrial complex pumping billions and billions of dollars to restore economies, right? I don't think we want to go there. Barack Obama needs to say no to that as soon as getting into office. I suspect what he'll do is he'll say, we haven't made a decision on that. I hope so, at least.
Mm, yeah.
If he does agree to continue with this missile defense nonsense, insanity, really. Nonsense I could deal with. Insanity, because it brings us close to war. Why are we close to war at all with Russia and China? What is going on here that we would even have to? Wouldn't it make sense to be one of the very, very first things that Barack Obama does is to sit down and talk? You know, they say, oh, he's going to talk to dictators like, Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran. Well, how about if he talked to Russia and China and said, look, let's create a nuclear-free world. We'll certainly, to begin with, reduce the nuclear missiles that the United States and Russia has pointed at one another. We'll immediately begin a reduction down to, say, 500 from 10,000 folks, including ones that, with a flip of a switch, and, well, you know, they don't flip switches anymore, but, you know, with a press of a computer button, can target Detroit with three...
Well, excuse me.
Hopchick. As they say in the Czech Republic.
Oh, is that what they say?
Yeah,
when someone sneezes?
Yeah, okay. We're there. Something like that. Right. All right, let's move on with this. But anyways, we are really and literally, you know, these madmen that these monstrous, what could be worse than evil, incompetent people running our world? And that's what we have in Washington right now. I thought, and I should even take this off my website, of saying that there ought to be a mass movement to get Bush and Cheney to resign immediately and let the Democrats begin to run things. I mean, because that would have Nancy Pelosi as president. I know she's not real popular, and she's not with me either. But anything to get these guys out of office. I mean, can we take another 2 or 3 months of them? I don't think so. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Pat and Flint talking about Flint and the sit-downs. Hey, Pat, you're on the air with Peter and Jillian.
Thanks a lot. Those sit-downs, by the way, were done in GM plants in Flint.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. You're absolutely right.
We're very proud of the sit-downs crackers here in Flint.
Yeah, and, you know, that's what I count on you guys to keep my history straight. I don't know why I thought that even, but you're right. Absolutely right.
Peter, I'm a Flint boy who'd lived in Washington, D.C. for 30 years, and I came home here to Michigan about 4 years ago. And I got to tell you, I'm a GM shareholder. Mm-hmm. I'm a Ford shareholder. And I still have a bunch of worthless Delphi stock.
Gotcha.
And my feeling is, let them go belly up. It's probably the only thing that's going to help get these companies straightened out in the long run. Look, if the government ponies up the loans, you're still going to have the same incompetent guys at the helm of these companies. You're just going to be dumping good money in after bad. What is needed here is an entire house cleaning. The labor negotiation, the labor contracts, unfortunately, are going to have to be revisited because the cost structures are such that that they're not competitive. But these management contracts have to be busted up as well. I mean, the idea that Rick Wagner is going to be overseeing an investment of taxpayer dollars in his company when he's run the thing into the ground to begin with is revolting.
Doesn't
matter. By the way,
tonight
I heard on the radio, just as we're talking about bailing out GM, it was on CBS News tonight that General Motors is negotiating an acquisition of an automaker in China. They want to increase their stake in a Chinese automaker at the same time when their North American operations are going down the tubes.
Hey, well, tell me, Pat, what do you think about it seems to me, the correct dire predictions of what would happen if GM goes belly up?
Well, I think if you want to see what happens when an auto company goes belly up, come up here to Flint and take a look.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, General Motors employed 60,000 people in this community back in the 60s. Now we're down to about 13. And when Delphi finally shuts everything down up here, we're going to be down about another 4,000 or 5,000 after that.
Well, it sounds then, and I tend to think this way, we're damned if we do and damned if we don't.
That's right. You know, where the government would be better off, and I can tell you this from having spent 30 years in Washington, is not taking this money to prop up these dinosaurs. Let them die. Companies have a lifespan just like people do. Let these companies go belly up. Take that money and start seeding new ventures in America. Let a million new companies sprout from the ashes.
Well, say even just a few. Well, that's not on the agenda. And that dinosaur remark is exactly, sort of the Republican talking points, which, maybe they are dinosaurs. I don't know. And maybe that's what scares me, that the idea of propping up exactly what you say, these people that made many of the decisions that sent them into a tailspin. But, Toyota's not doing well. Honda's not doing well. I mean, how much of it is the economy, as a lot of people say?
Look, obviously the economy is a factor. But the problem is that GM, Ford, and Chrysler have suffered from years of management incest. Okay?
Yep.
I mean, these are guys that have been doing each other, all right? And it's been management inbreeding, and it produces the same kind of problem that biological inbreeding produces. You get dwarfs and morphs and freaks running the show, and that's been what's happened here.
Well, yeah, let's line up on the dwarfs, but
I think they're called little people.
Yes. All right. Thank you, Pat. Now, what he has enunciated is one compelling aspect or one compelling side of the argument that, and that's what the Republicans are saying. We're throwing good money after bad. The other side of it is, if we don't, we're going to wind up to be what? A generalized Flint? I mean, I think if you're listening in some other part of the country, I don't have to explain to Flint. Pat did an adequate job, or if you've seen Michael Moore's original film. Yeah, and GM it was, which were the ones that were occupied way back when. All right, here's Stephen in Wyandotte. Stephen, hi, it's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for joining us on WRIF.
Yeah, you got me?
I got you.
Gotcha.
Hey, why don't they listen to Senator Kerry when he was going against Bush? And, put underground all over the world, well, in the United States, in Washington, D.C., or other countries, England, or wherever the terrorism is they run to, or drop some atom bombs on, like, Hiroshima in Japan, do that in some of the mountains where those terrorists hide, the ones that President Bush is buddies with. He's buddies with those terrorism leaders. Why don't you drop some atom bombs on those mountains or something?
Well, you never can tell what that man will do. He's got a few months left. Maybe he will. All right. Thank you for your opinion, Stephen. Glad to get it on the air. Here is Paul in Sterling Heights. Hi, Paul. It's Peter and Jolene.
Let me walk into an area where you might hear me better.
Okay.
I'm working in Quebec.
That what?
I'm working in Quebec.
Oh, you're breaking up.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Just a minute.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm gonna
can you hear me now?
Wait a minute. I'm Paul. I'm going to put you on hold here.
Yeah, we'll come back to you.
We'll come back to you. Don't you worry. Here is Mike. Mike's in Lincoln Park. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hey, Pete, Julian.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey, I just had a quick question. Well, a statement and a question. That Slim Pickens was on The Daily Show earlier this week, and he was saying that.
Hey, wait,
Boone Pickens.
Right. I thought I had it wrong.
Yeah, Slim Pickens was the guy that was riding the A-bomb that Stephen wanted to drop, you know, in the Dr. Strangelove.
But he was saying that we're going to see $100 a barrel oil by the end of the year or within a year. I couldn't remember exactly what he said.
I suspect it's going to go back up.
He also said that what I've heard time and time again was that we import 70% of our oil, but I've never heard how much we export. That's a question. I was wondering
I don't know. We do export it, and most of the oil, like, for instance, in Alaska, I believe, is exported.
It's exported, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so all this stuff, drill, baby, drill, besides...
Yeah, drill, baby, drill, and then sell, baby, sell, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I mean, why don't we... I know we have to have trade, but when we're talking about, can we trade something else besides our own oil?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, if there was conservation in this country, real conservation of the way that it was maybe a matter of life and death for the economy... that we could be oil self-sufficient, let alone energy self-sufficient. All right, thank you. I'm going to go through these calls a little quicker because we're getting down towards the end of it. Let's see how Paul from Sterling Heights' phone is working now. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
All right. You're good now.
Okay. One of the things, I've got 32 years in, and I can't say I've never walked out of work without a boot mark on my butt. What I'd like to tell you about that is what we've lost in all these bailouts is what I like to call organizational memory. The guys I used to work with knew how to make a buck with this place. And now it's being managed by what I like to call, fondly, arrogant frat boys and sorority.
Arrogant frat boys and what?
Sorority girls.
Oh, sorority girls. Okay. They get the women in there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, look, these people... they're more interested in saving money and making profit, and it's sad to see.
You know what, Paul? We're just getting too. The quality is just way too low to let you go on, and you have some anger there, which I think so many of us do here because the potential for is right here. I mean, it's all going to hell because these people were going for themselves instead of what they should. The common good. Ooh, that's scary. All right, thank you, Paul. I mean, some people actually think that you start going for the common good. That's like communism or something. Here is Shane in Milan. Hi, it's Peter and Jolene. You're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
On a point the guy brought up before, as far as us selling our oil, that doesn't matter as much because we don't make enough. We only make half as much oil as we need anyway, so we're going to have to import almost all or a lot of it anyway.
Right,
so
sure.
That doesn't matter. I wanted to ask you a question, and then I'll hang up, raise a couple points. Earlier, I think you were blowing out of proportion Russia's and China's aggression towards us.
No,
we're on the fringe of war. I don't believe that's so.
I don't think we're on the edge of war. I didn't say that, but the context for escalating this is when you try to create allies on the border of another country, like Ukraine and Georgia and what have you, and integrate them into your military alliance, when you start putting hardware in countries that are on the periphery of another country, and, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 miles away, it is easily interpreted by the other country as aggressive moves.
You're right. The point I wanted to get to was, you, without much explanation, you claimed America's missile defense system as being completely a waste, no purpose to it. Now, with you admitting that China and Russia are both being very, or we're escalating that war, and war could possibly break out at some time. And we, the missile defense, could possibly stop nukes from destroying American citizens.
Well, don't you think that, well, for one thing, they don't work. I mean, right now, Russia has like, I forget what they have, 7,000 or 8,000 missiles. And one of the ways they were always going to circumvent any anti-missile system was just these massive launches that there's no way in the world. I mean, for one thing, these things are boondoggles. The military keeps devising these systems so they can get taxpayer money. And it's not even clear that they even work, or they would even be able to do that, or they would be able to, in any regard, do what they're supposed to. But we don't have to go to that edge. I mean, this floored the Russians. Why in the world this maniac, how can you be, incompetent maniac? Well, I guess maybe it goes together. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, decide that they're going to put these missile defense systems in Europe, U.S. systems in Europe, close to the Russian border, to stop Iranian missiles. From what? Wait. They're not going to hit us. That's not the trajectory that they go. They're not going to send, Iran is not going to attack the United States. Has no capacity to do it and will never have the capacity to do it. And they're not going to send them over Poland. This is purely, absolutely aimed at Russia, and they know it. All right, thank you very much. Let's get our last caller here. It's Dave from Rochester. Hey, Dave, it's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for being our last caller.
Hey, thanks for putting me on.
Sure.
Man, I got a lot of stuff to say, but one of the things that bothers me is that we keep on beating on the management now of GM and Ford and Chrysler, and I don't know how you replace these guys and get a better management team. It seems like the legacy they've inherited, I think they're doing the best they can with what they've got. They're not getting billion-dollar bonuses like some of these Goldman Sachs guys are. But furthermore...
But wait a minute. Let's just examine that about... I would fire these guys if I own the company. And there's a lot of places from which new economic leadership could come, marketing leadership could come in terms of any of these companies. Hey, the United States could say to them, hey, we'll give you the money, but you got to get new people in. And here's who you're going to put in. We're having this major shift in the United States government. I mean, it could have gone either way in the election. But that's a pretty big transition, and it's done in a manner that, in this case, the people thought the new leadership would be better. Barack Obama has never led a country before, but there was confidence in him that both that he could recruit people that have had experience, and that's why what he's doing, and he has been invested by the majority of American people to bring about change that will benefit the majority of people. Why couldn't we do the same thing with a corporation?
Well, I don't know who you're going to find that's going to be better than the guys we got right now.
How about me or you?
Well, of course, we could do it, but I guess what I'm saying is that the way we've got to this situation is because over the last 30 years we've had a situation where the quarterly, the big three have been working for Wall Street, trying to make profits every quarter and not focusing on long-term goals. And it's the American system of capitalism, of these short-term quarterly profit, earning reports. That's what's been the problem with the big threes.
Well, let me do this. We are completely out of time. I think that's a fine way to end the show. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that, and I appreciate you calling in. Thank you to all of you for listening. Jolene Jordan, thank you so much.
Peter. Yes.
Please stay tuned. There's a couple of interesting interviews that addresses these problems. What do we do to save this country? We'll talk next week. Thanks for joining us.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this. Day night to 10 with Meltdown. It's like getting hit in the head by a 2x4.
On election day this year, it's quite possible that McCain would be president for the next 4 years. The demographics are striking. When you look at it, the exit polls election day this time around, you had in the youngest demographic, 18 to 29. Obama carried the vote 66%. That's huge. I mean, two out of three young adults voted for Obama. And then you flip that over, and the elderly people are virtually the only age demographic that McCain was able to win.
Yeah, and there were a number of surprises. Like there was an attempt, particularly through these insidious emails, to Jewish voters that Barack Obama was a secret Muslim and that he was going to not be a friend of Israel. And instead, that overwhelmingly Jewish voters voted for Barack Obama.
Yeah, and it can't be said too often. We need to keep saying, of course, there is nothing in the world wrong with being a Muslim, but in
right.
the political context, the targeting that was done by the Republican Party, particularly to Jewish voters in Florida, was actually just spreading something that was factually wrong with a nefarious political goal. And one of the really sweet victories was that Obama carried Florida.
We should say thank you, Sarah Silverman. And if you don't know what I'm referring to, dear listeners, just Google her name, Sarah Silverman. Norman Solomon is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. His essay, A Mandate for Spreading the Wealth, is at commondreams.org or normansolomon.com. Let's go back to that idea, though, about spreading the wealth. I mean, that has the ring to many people of socialism, whatever that happens to mean. And I'm not sure that there's a clear definition of either socialism or spreading the wealth.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I'm old enough, I'm 57, and when I was listening to the Cream and the Beatles and so forth as a teenager, I was also in a decade where this was a huge issue. Would the country be moving to socialism? And as a matter of fact, around the first time that I heard the Beatles, I also heard a debate as a 13-year-old over whether Medicare, if approved, would be socialism. And in 1964, Barry Goldwater ran for president saying, oh, we must not have this program called Medicare enacted into law because that would be socialism. And, you know, I tell people now, ask your parents or your grandparents, or if you're over 65 yourself, if you'd like to get rid of Medicare because somebody says it's socialist, and I think we all know the answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. Actually, if you get kind of precise into the word, as opposed to remembering those totalitarian mass states like China and the Soviet Union and what they were doing in the Eastern Bloc, and I use the word for socializing costs, like, for instance, we do all the time with police and fire and EMS and schools and roads and any number of other instances. Essentially, that's socializing the cost. We don't have each little municipality try to, you know, raise funds from its citizenry, or, you know, things would be a mess. You'd have one stretch of a highway real good. You go into a poor neighborhood and it'd be filled with holes.
Or how would you like to have every road private so that you have to pay a nickel for every mile you drive anywhere in North America? I mean, it would be crazy. So as you say, we do have a socialized system no matter what. The question is, on what basis, who profits, is it egalitarian, or are these vast gaps between the resources of the rich and poor going to continue to widen, which has been the history of the last few decades?
Tell us a little about that, because you speak about that in your article, A Mandate for Spreading the Wealth. Just what are the statistics, if you have in front of you? If you don't, I do.
Well, yeah, actually, you've got the article there. Yeah, tell us what we have.
Okay, it's the top 1% of households received 22.9% of all pre-tax income in 2006. Now, the importance of that is more than double that what the figure was in the 1970s. So this is from the Working Group on Extreme Inequality report. And I get callers into my talk show who say, well, they earned it. It's their money. Why are you, Norman Solomon or Peter Werbe or Barack Obama, going to take away their money?
Well, yeah, if we do want to have a predatory system, then we've got a pretty good one right now. I mean, if people like the idea that so many foreclosures are happening around the country, that people are losing their homes because predatory lending made some banking executives and investors very, very wealthy. If they want to live in the sort of the basket of crabs society, then, yeah, let's just say you got it, you get to keep it, whoever can grab it is the winner. there is a different vision, and that is, for instance, health care is a human right, which I believe is true. If we believe health care is a human right, then you don't have lower-income people or the so-called middle class at the mercy of the medical insurance industry, which I think we would be kind to say is predatory. It's all about maximizing profit and minimizing health care, and we all have had that experience if we've lived for a number of years. Where we or somebody we know has paid into health care with premiums every month, or their employer has done so, then when they need the policy most, they find out it's about as solid as Swiss cheese.
Now, I certainly agree with that, but I don't think that answers the objection that it's their money. They made it. Why does the government have the right to take it from them?
Well, the government in many ways gave it to them in the first place. When you look at policies, the way taxes are structured, the way that some people are promoted, and that, I would have to say, is inevitable. You know, it's a myth of the neutral government. The government, because of the complexity of the economy and policies, it's going to favor some sectors or not. The free market is a myth, given the size of the economy and the power that's inherent in accumulating money. So if the government were to just, to the extent possible, step back, those who have will have more. The cliche is true. It takes money to make money. And it's the upward mobility of the poor is largely a myth, with some exceptions.
Yeah, I would say that, in fact, I've always said on the air that we have something much closer to a caste system. That there's great rigidity of upward mobility, and although there was anecdotally there was there's any number of stories of yep. poor people becoming rich and a few rich people becoming poor, but in the main you stay in the class that you originated in.
Yeah, and that is, you know, going way back, a reality that cuts against the mythology. For instance, the Horatio Alger story of, say, my grandparents grew up hearing, and that it all sounds well and good, but you know, if we believe that that's in any way typical, then, you know, buy the Golden Gate Bridge. I'll sell it to you.
Well, there's a number, as you know, there's a number of other factors that are relevant here. And one of them is that what has become sort of a cliche now, it takes a village. And for anyone to do business in this country, it takes the entire infrastructure. It takes their workers. And one of the ways that people get wealthy is by taking advantage of the fact that there's a free market in wages. Because without unionization, without a high minimum wage, that the amount of money that accrues to the owners is greatly enhanced.
Yeah, well, you could argue, and I think you would be on solid ground to do so, that the needs for the society, including for workers and running a profitable business, are just way too vastly expensive for any corporation to shoulder. I mean, we're talking about viaducts, electrical grids, roads, bridges. You don't have corporations shouldering that sort of burden, whether we're talking about Michigan or California or anywhere else. So the settling of the West, for instance, was a situation where the U.S. government was brought in to foot the bill for these huge expenditures to move water, for electricity development and all the rest of it. Without that, without public education for workers, for instance, these corporations are not going to be able to thrive. So the so-called free market stance is basically, when you come right down to it, let government, through the socialized cost, through taxpayers of a tax structure that is not particularly progressive, let them finance all of these necessary infrastructure needs of corporations so corporations can get it basically at little cost and then turn around, have a massive profit and say, well, we earned this fair and square.
Yeah. Speak to us a little about the end of your essay, A Mandate for Spreading the Wealth. Let me read from it. You talk about how in the 2008 tax year, households in the bottom 20% will receive $26 due to Bush tax cuts. Households in the middle 20% will receive $784, and in the top 1%, $50,000. And you write, we can reverse those trends. The time and opportunity have come to, quote, spread the wealth. When President Franklin Roosevelt, heard pleas for bold steps to counter extreme economic inequality, he replied, go out and make me do it. Barack Obama, you say, won the presidency after clearly saying he wants to spread the wealth. Let's make him do it. How do we do that, Norman Solomon?
Well, as you mentioned, Peter, I was an elected Obama delegate to the Democratic National Convention. But that said, I don't think that Obama got where he is today by being a boat rocker. He has played along with people like Penny Pritzker, who in Chicago, based there, was the chair of his national finance committee for his campaign. She made a lot of money off of these subprime mortgages, and he has been very, very cozy with Wall Street and so forth. So he has some progressive tendencies, but also he is rooted in the economic power structure. Which way he will move as president largely depends on what we at the grassroots are able to do. If we build the momentum that demands and in electoral terms pushes effectively for these progressive social changes, including spreading the wealth, I think we can move him in that direction. If we just let political nature take its course, the big money will surround the White House, and we will be very disappointed.
Yeah, business as usual, in other words, which isn't working at all. So that ought to be an impetus for us to move beyond that. I think that Barack Obama represented almost everything to the people that voted for him. An end to the war, fixing the economy, health care, any decent human values, the end to torture. You could go on for the rest of this program. He represented that. What he embodies, that's what we're talking about. Will he, in fact, act on all that? And people cannot remain passive. If they, I can just imagine people just kind of, you know, how you kind of wash your hands or something, kind of slap them together like I'm doing right now on the radio. Okay, I'm going home for the next 4 years. Well, then you're going to have the audacity of hope. That is to say, you can just hope that Barack Obama does what you'd like him to do.
Well, hope won't get us very far, unfortunately, and people may say, and there's a lot of projection into this, well, he was a community organizer, we know where he's coming from. Well, great, but where is he going? And that is yet to be determined.
Well, you belong, in fact, you're a national co-chair of healthcare, not warfare, and probably like most organizations of this manner, does good work and tries to mobilize people, but we don't see millions of people active in this. Most Americans are pretty passive politically, and in fact, what I've called it for years is the Greenpeace effect. Rather than going out in a huge demonstration demanding environmental protection or justice, people write a check to Greenpeace and think, well, I've done my duty, and now I'm going to go back to it. But so, I mean, we need some action here. What does healthcare not warfare do, for instance?
Well, we're hooked up with part of, launched by the group Progressive Democrats of America, and we have email that goes out to anybody who signs up, about 150,000 people. And by the way, folks can go to the web. It's on the web at pdamerica.org and sign up. And we have, we do have demonstrations, we have forums, we have letter writing, we have strategic events. In the case of the Democratic National Convention, we organized a petition of close to 500 delegates to that national convention calling for guaranteed health care for all to be in the National Democratic Party platform. And because we were gaining so many signers and some momentum, there actually was a little give in the platform of the National Party to call for guaranteed health care. You know, what that means in practice, you know, remains to be seen. So it's an ongoing process to keep organizing as best we can.
Norman Solomon, we first met years ago when I was doing a nationally syndicated program, you were a media critic, still are. You still have great powers of observation about how our media is the medium through which reality is reported to us. How do you assess them for this election cycle?
Well, to a large extent, it was a baseline of a repetition compulsion disorder. You know, most of the coverage, as measured, for instance, by the Pew Research Center this fall, was horse racing. And so for all the talk about how issues were important, and they are because it's about our economy, about war and our lives, when it came through the tube, cable news, for instance, most of the coverage one way or another was trying to analyze which horse was ahead and the strategy and all the rest of it. There are some isolated cases of great policy debates in media, but on the whole, it's, you know, the conventional wisdom squared and cubed, And in retrospect, I got to say that the conventional wisdom the last 18 months on the presidential race of 2008, it was usually dead wrong.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I think that media knew that Barack Obama was the projected winner for probably the last, at least the last month before this went down, except they still, for their interest to keep people watching, were presenting it as this tight race.
Yeah, certainly the last couple of weeks, because things were not turning or shifting. But there always was an outside chance, given all the obstacles. We didn't know whether there was a so-called Bradley effect in 2008 in terms of racism unstated but reflected in the voting booth. Questions of would legitimate voters be in large numbers turned away because of intimidation tactics. In Indiana, for instance, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld a state law, very onerous, requiring official ID to be able to vote. So we didn't know how some of those factors would really play out. And this is still an imperfect union in terms of democracy, to put it mildly, and we got to work on election reform to make it more fair.
I know we just have about a minute left, and I'm remiss in bringing up one subject, and that's that of race. It looks to me like 56 million white people voted for McCain and Palin, and Barack Obama's victory came for this this wonderful rainbow patchwork of everybody that the country really is. In Alabama, 90% of white people voted for McCain and Palin.
Yeah, well, you know, certainly there had to have been an element of racism in the national stats. But on the other hand, I think it's true that the Republican Party, in terms of its national campaigning, has been the successor of the Dixiecrats. Their strength has been in the South. If you look at the last few races, for instance, Dukakis versus Bush in 88, the Southern white man was overwhelmingly likely to vote for the Republican. And when Jesse Jackson ran in the 80s, he got very few white male votes in the South. So this is a longstanding pattern that that you know is moving in various directions on depending on what part of the country we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, places like Tennessee and Arkansas actually increased its support for the Republican Party over in their 2004 record. Let me see what we got. Ooh, we got just a few seconds left. Any suggestions on someone's listening that's listening, Norman, and they're saying, "Okay, I'm ready. What should I do? Where could they go? What's a good website?" And you can be self-serving.
Oh, yeah. Well, I really urge people on media criticism, go to the website of FAIR, where I'm an associate. It's FAIR.org. And I'd also recommend, again, and reinforce what you mentioned, one of the fine websites is commondreams.org. And if you go there, you know, look at mainstream media, but look at the independent progressive outlets as well. And as usual, think for yourself and hopefully take action.
Okay. As usual, Norman Solomon is too modest. You can go to Norman Solomon, SOLOMON.com, and Progressive Democrats of America, Healthcare, Not Warfare. You can just Google those and find those. You can also go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Norman Solomon, thanks again for being on the program.
Hey, thank you,
this
Peter.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
$9 million.
All of you who have stuck with me.
Divided by 900,000 citizens.
Through very difficult times.
$10 a head. Now, you're not getting much more out of these guys.
I'm sorry.
Good thing you can still text message us at the RIM. Get your request, concert info, and your unfair cellular advantage. Text keyword WRIF to 71913. And
I'm sorry.
And we'll never be embarrassed to hear from you.
I would never quit on you.
Log on to WRIF.com for more detail. 101 WRIF.
Phone blowing up.
What exactly is telemetrics and what does it mean to me?
How does changing light bulbs save me money?
Where are the best places to find organically grown foods?
When will Michigan be seeing an increase in green building?
What are some easy steps my family can take to be more green?
How can my coworkers and I start a recycling program at work?
Got lots of questions on Michigan's green future? Get lots of answers at movingmichiganforward.com. You can also join the discussion, offer your ideas, suggestions, and advice on how we can all work together to live greener in Michigan. MovingMichiganForward.com, in partnership with Next Energy, is brought to you in part by IBEW Local 58 and NECA Signatory Employers, the Good Food Company, and Charter One.
Got lots of questions on Michigan's green future? Get lots of answers at MovingMichiganForward.com.
MovingMichiganForward.com. Learn, share, grow, make your future green at MovingMichiganForward.com.
Your credit card debt is getting out of control. You're having trouble making the monthly minimums. Sound familiar? You have to do something, but what? Well, you don't have to file for bankruptcy. The mortgage brokers want you to put up your family home to pay off credit card debts. Problem is that more often than not, you find yourself using the credit cards again. Only this time, there's no equity left in your home, and you have a whole new pile of credit card debt. It doesn't have to be this way. We're Credit Card Relief. We help people just like you get out of debt in months instead of years and save you thousands of dollars. Call now for a free consultation. We're an attorney-driven program with an excellent reputation. The consultation is free and the relief is real.
Call 1-866-290-8282. 1-866-290-8282. Not available in all states. 1-866-290-8282.
Attention! Celtrixa is currently seeking participants with stretch marks. If you have stretch marks due to weight gain, pregnancy, even bodybuilding, you are eligible to try Celtrixa free. Celtrixa was introduced to improve skin and has now been shown to dramatically reduce the size and depth of stretch marks on any area of the body. It effectively fades even very dark stretch marks as it repairs the damaged skin. To participate in the Celtrixa trial and see results risk-free, call 1-800-962-1055. Stretch marks can mar and damage the skin, making the body look unattractive. But right now, you can join the thousands of people who have seen stretch marks diminish and fade, watched as ugly zipper-like marks began to repair themselves. Participate in the free trial by calling today. If you're serious about getting rid of your stretch marks, you are eligible to participate and experience a free trial of Celtrixa. For your free trial, call this number today. 1-800-962-1055. 1-800-962-1055. 1-800-962-1055.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. And the election last Tuesday, the results we saw in dramatic fashion beginning Tuesday night and into Wednesday. Will it change the world? A great amount of exuberance among the people who supported Barack Obama. Well, we have to look at this in very clear terms. Joining me is Robert Kuttner. He's written a book called Obama's Challenge, America's Economic Crisis and the Power of a Transformative Presidency. And Robert Kuttner is the author of what's been called the most prescient book of the year, the one we're going to be discussing. He's a co-founder and co-editor of the American Prospect magazine, as well as a distinguished senior fellow at the think tank Demos. He's a longtime columnist, or he was, for Business Week, and now continues to write columns in the Boston Globe. We're reaching him in his Demos office in New York City. Robert Kuttner, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you, Peter. Glad to be with you.
How did you get this book all ready to roll?
Well, I took a bit of a gamble. I had written a book about a year and a half ago warning that the economy was headed for a real financial crisis, and it sort of hit me that if the economy really was headed for a financial crisis, that Obama would be likely to win. So I took a little bit of a risk. I wrote the book, finished it over the summer, and got it into print in September on the assumption that Obama would be the president. And fortunately, he was elected president, and not so fortunately, he does face a dire economic crisis. And so the question is, will he rise to the occasion and be the great president that I think he can be? Will he be Roosevelt or will he be Hoover?
Well, people are going to think I stole that phrase from you because that's actually what I've been thinking. That those are weighty and challenging choices, aren't they?
Well, this is one of these moments that comes once in 100 years when a new president either rises to the occasion and transforms what people think the country can do, think what the country needs to do. He's already been transformative in one respect. We've elected an African American, and I never thought I'd see that in my lifetime. And he did it not by being the affirmative action candidate, not by being the black candidate, but by being the best candidate around. It was not an affirmative action moment. It was a Jackie Robinson moment. It was somebody who was so good, who rose to the top so clearly, that people who may have still been somewhat bigoted were willing to put that aside. So he's already transformed attitudes about race. The question is, can he transform attitudes about economics?
Well, we are certainly facing even a bigger challenge than when you wrote Obama's challenge, America's Economic Crisis and the Power of a Transformative Presidency. The depth of it has just been magnified incredibly. And if we think about 1929, which was the year that Herbert Hoover was sworn in and the stock market collapsed, it was then, after that, into 1930 and 31, that the results of the unemployment began to hit us. Do you think that's going to be the trajectory here?
I think it's certainly a big risk. And what's interesting, and you just alluded to this, the Depression didn't hit bottom until the end of 1932, and there was about a year and a half where the air was slowly coming out of the economy when Hoover had a chance to prevent the stock market crash from turning into a depression. But he did not act. He chased it downward. And I think Obama needs to learn from that history. So I argue in Obama's challenge that he needs to be much more radical as a president than he was as a candidate because of the gravity of the crisis. And by radical, I don't mean being some kind of crazy left-winger. I mean recognizing how serious the problems are and recognizing that the solutions to the problems are at the margins of what is mainstream discourse right now on things like how tough do you have to be on the banks, how much public money do you have to spend to prevent double-digit unemployment, to prevent the economy from just going into a reinforcing cycle of collapse. How do you save the auto industry? How do you save other industries? And, you know, Roosevelt faced similar crises, and Obama's going to have to step up to the plate because on January 21st, this recession, which started out being George Bush's recession, becomes his recession, and people look to him to get us out of it.
Well, when we look at the economy now, it needs drastic measures or radical measures. In one sense,
right.
The word radical, I mean, well, the radical means either extreme or it means going to the root of the problem as well. So that entails something that we may not have seen since the time of Roosevelt, when there was something so different put up as legislation. Give me an example of what one of these areas that would make sense that the American people would accept.
Well, I'll give you three different kinds of things he has to do. First, Secretary of the Treasury Henry Paulson, straight out of Wall Street, is not doing this financial rescue properly. Congress entrusted him with $700 billion of taxpayer money. That's a lot of money. I mean, Congress will argue about whether you've got $50 million to spare to spend on kids, but when the banks need it, you know, they add a few zeros and they spend $700 billion. And the banks are not lending the money because they're so traumatized by all the bad bets that they made earlier in this decade. So Paulson's view is, well, we can't push the banks too hard because if we push the banks too hard, that might scare off private capital. I think if you give somebody $700 billion, you've purchased the right to tell them what to do. That's how capitalism works. I think there ought to be public representatives put on the board of these banks. I think we may need to nationalize a bank or two and show the banks how to do it right, get the credit flowing again. That's one thing. And by the way, that's not as crazy as it sounds. The government already does this. Whenever the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation takes over a failed bank, they don't just throw money at it, they take it over. And they get rid of the toxic managers along with the toxic assets. And they run it. And Sheila Bair, who's the chair of the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, took over a $32 billion failed bank in California that had been up to its ears in subprime mortgages. And she went in there and she refinanced those mortgages so that people wouldn't lose their homes. That's the kind of thing that Paulson has failed to do and that I hope Obama's Treasury Secretary does. Secondly, we need to solve the housing crisis. This meltdown started in some respects with a housing bubble that then led to a housing crash fomented by subprime mortgages. The government ought to get in there and refinance these mortgages so that people don't lose their homes. And it isn't just the tragedy of the people who are foreclosed upon. It's their neighbors. It's their whole community where innocent people who paid their mortgages on time, the value of their house is going down the drain, too. And unless we put some kind of a safety net under housing prices, American families lose trillions and trillions of dollars of the equity that they thought they had in their homes. The third thing we need is very large-scale public spending, spending on infrastructure, spending on green energy, spending to repair basic systems that have been underfunded for 30 years. And you do this to compensate for the fact that people are losing their jobs in the private sector. State and local governments are having to lay off people. It's a crime in a recession for state and local governments to lay off people. All Washington has to do is send a check to Detroit or to the state of Michigan or to cities all over Ohio, and you save jobs from being cut by helping the budgets of hard-pressed cities and towns. This idea is not a radical idea. It was invented by Richard Nixon. But we've gotten so far away from the idea that Washington has a responsibility to help not just Wall Street but Main Street, that the idea of sending $100 billion to the cities and towns so they don't have to lay off people in a recession, that sounds like some kind of a, you know, a strange notion. And so those are the big three things. Do the bank rescue properly so that ordinary people benefit. Do housing refinancings, not by bailing out bondholders, but by helping homeowners. And put some money out there so that a recession doesn't turn into a depression.
Robert Kuttner is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. His book is Obama's Challenge, America's Economic Crisis and Power of a Transformative Presidency. And Robert Kuttner says that Obama must be a transformative president or a failed one. There's little in between that little wiggle room here. Going back to 1932, the Democratic platform for that year was a balanced budget. Certainly,
yes, it was.
And Roosevelt realized that this was not going to solve any of the problems. And so we're in a deficit mess now, left to us by 8 years of tax cuts for the wealthy and big wars and what have you. The big question comes, where does all this money come from if we're already broke?
Well, you know, we're not broke. And this is another one of these disabling myths. I devote a whole chapter of the book to this. I call it Audacity versus Undertow. There's an undertow of bad advice floating around. The fact is that the public debt of the United States is 40% of 1 year's GDP. 40%, it's about $5.6 billion. That's the debt held by the public as opposed to the debt that one government agency owes to another. Now, if you compare that with where we were after World War II, in World War II, the size of the national debt relative to the size of the economy was three times as big as it is now. And, of course, World War II, 1945, the war ended, that was the beginning of a 30-year economic boom. And you ask the question, well, gosh, how could a country that was saddled with this much debt go on to have a 30-year boom? And the answer is you have to look at what that debt went to buy. What did it buy? Why did we go into debt? Well, we went into debt to win World War II. And as a byproduct of winning World War II, we had to recapitalize American industry. We built all kinds of war production plants. We invested massively in science and technology so that we would have better weaponry than the Nazis. We built bomber lines that turned out planes at an unheard-of rate and ships. And in 1945, all of that production technology was turned back into civilian production technology. We trained and re-employed millions and millions of Americans. And so the debt went to buy something that actually made the economy more productive. And I argue that if we increase the national debt now in a recession, that could be a depression if we don't act quickly. And we use that money to make college education affordable again, to provide universal health care, to rebuild rotting public infrastructure, to have a modern electricity grid system, to have green energy, have automobiles that can compete with the best cars made by any foreign manufacturer. That's money that's not being put down a rat hole. That's money that's making the economy more productive, more competitive, creates jobs, puts paychecks back in people's pockets. And if the alternative is another Great Depression, increasing the deficit for a couple of years is surely the lesser evil.
Sure. And yet we don't, and I know you're not advocating increased military spending. Isn't the military spending, the military budget, a large part of the problem?
Well, where did the Bush deficit come from? It came from two sources. One, we cut taxes on the richest people, the few people who could really afford to pay higher taxes. And then secondly, we had this huge military buildup. And so I argue that if you took the same deficit, but instead of spending it on a military buildup and cutting taxes on wealthy people, and spend it on creating jobs here at home, rebuilding the infrastructure of the country, and making America able to export goods again instead of exporting jobs, that would be a very good use of the deficit. So I don't think you can get all of this money by cutting the military. We'll get something of a peace dividend when the war in Iraq finally ends. I think you get most of it by restoring taxes on the richest 2 or 3% of people, and you get some of it by eliminating some military expenditures, but I think the situation in Afghanistan is so serious now, that's where we should have been fighting instead of in Iraq, so we'll save some money in Iraq when that war ends. Some of it's going to have to be reprogrammed to Afghanistan, so maybe we'll save $50 or $100 billion when you add it all up for military cuts, but we're going to have to restore taxes based on people's ability to pay.
Which doesn't mean the middle class or the working class.
No, and Obama's been very good on that. He said nobody making under $250,000 a year will get a tax increase, and people making under $200,000 a year will get a tax cut, and that strikes me as about right. And, you know, it's interesting. For three decades now, the charge against Democrats has been, oh, they'll just raise your taxes. And what Obama succeeded in doing, really for the first time since Lyndon Johnson, was saying, well, wait a minute, it isn't just he'll raise your taxes. Whose taxes should we raise? Whose taxes should we cut? And what Obama said was we should raise taxes on the top 2% and cut taxes on the bottom 95%. And he kept saying that over and over and over again. It finally sunk in.
Do you think it did? Do you think it really did?
I mean, absolutely. And you know, he would go to rallies the last 2 weeks of the campaign when, you know, McCain did this whole stunt with Joe the Plumber. And Obama would go to rallies and he would say, I am going to raise taxes on the top 2%. They've had a party during this whole period. Bush cut their taxes. And then he'd look out the audience. That's $250,000 a year. How many of you make more than $250,000 a year? Of course, nobody would raise their hands.
Even if they did.
Well, but most people don't.
No, they don't.
You got to be in the top 1 or 2%
sure.
to make that kind of money. And it sort of dawned on people that it isn't just a question of whether taxes go up or down. It's a question of whose taxes go up and whose taxes go down.
How much would be gained by, for instance, eliminating the cap on payroll taxes? So you would, I think, what is it, top out now at 100,000 or something?
I think it's 105, but that's very tricky because if, you know, in some parts of the country, $105,000, that's upper middle class. That's not rich, you know, and I think Obama set the bar about right. I mean, I do think that if you raise the cap, I mean, let me explain that for your listeners. Right now, the working person pays a much higher rate of payroll tax, Social Security tax, than the rich person because you only pay tax on the first, it keeps changing every year, but it's about the first $105,000 of income. Then you're home free. So if you're a millionaire, you pay taxes on the first $100,000 and then nothing on the next $900,000. What I would like to do is put an exemption in so that you don't pay tax on the first $15,000 or $20,000, then you start paying tax, and then you pay tax on every dollar of income. If you did that, you'd be better off if you made less than about $200,000 a year, and I think that's about what the break point ought to be before you raise people's taxes.
Robert Kuttner is my guest, and the book is Obama's Challenge, America's Economic Crisis and the Power of a Transformative Presidency. And I've been remiss in not bringing up Robert Kuttner's website. It's obamaschallenge.org.
It's .com, actually.
Oh, well, it says, okay, you get your Chelsea Green.
Oh, is it that? You know what? I actually think it's both. I think we managed to get both.
Okay.
But if
all
you
right.
Google it, If you Google it, you will find
Obama's Challenge. You can also go to peterwerby.com, where I will have a link as well. As you know history so well, Robert Kuttner, we were talking about the possibility or the necessity of Barack Obama becoming Roosevelt. If he is Hoover, he'll have a failed presidency. And you mentioned the term radical earlier. Many people saw Roosevelt's reforms, which were a reform of capitalism to give it life, to put limits on its worst abuses, to help people greatly at that time, were called radical socialist. And there's even some, I don't know whether it's folklore or history, that there was a coup being plotted against him because of his policies. Already we hear, in the continuation on the far right, there's I shouldn't even give these publicity, but that Obama is like Hitler, that he's prepared with this magnetic personality to take over in a way that that presidents never had, that he's a socialist, that that there's already impeach Obama websites. Mm-hmm. What? How is this going to be received by his critics? Do you think if some of these programs you are suggesting were implemented?
Well, you know, what's interesting is it didn't stick in the campaign because the better people got to know him, the more they realized he was a quite intelligent, reassuring, well-spoken person. I think if the right wing was using against him the fact that he's articulate, that's kind of desperation. Put yourself in the position of a Republican congressman, a very conservative congressman, and it's February 1st, and unemployment is 11%, and the cities and towns in your district are laying off people. They're cutting back education programs. They're cutting back public health programs. They're cutting back basic maintenance programs.
Which is already happening, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And but it's going to happen more. And so let's say Obama sends up legislation on February 1st to spend $400 billion a year in aid to the cities and states, in increased unemployment compensation, and in public infrastructure programs. Now, you're a Republican congressman, so you got your ideologues telling you, oh, this is terrible, this is socialist, vote against it. You got everybody else saying, my God, help us. Which way are you going to vote?
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's going to be interesting. I mean, we are not going into a recession business as usual situation.
No.
This is truly frightening what we're facing.
Yeah, in 6 months, this could be a depression if they don't act quickly, and they have to act on multiple fronts. They have to contain the damage to banks. They have to contain the collapse in housing prices, and they have to spend a ton of public money in the short term to put people back to work and to prevent states and localities from having to lay off people. And, you know, the other heartbreaking thing is if you look at community agencies that serve needy people, some of their money comes from government. Some of their money comes from private charitable donations. Guess what? Private charitable donations are based on the ability of individuals to donate, based on the ability of foundations who depend in turn on their endowments, and their endowments are worth half of what they used to be because of the stock market hit. So private cutbacks have to be added to public cutbacks if you look at life from the point of view of a social service group. And there's no excuse in the world for the federal government not to make up this money. I mean, my God, if they can cut a $700 billion check to Wall Street, how about $100 billion so that cities and towns don't have to lay off people in a recession?
Robert Kuttner, we just have a few minutes left, and I'm curious as to who has Barack Obama's ear, or who's, yeah, I guess that's the way to
Well, happily, a lot of people do. I mean, he is a person who loves to hear different viewpoints at staff meetings. He'll put people in a room who disagree with each other. He will run the meeting himself, and he's a very good listener, and he'll say, all right, I agree with you, Charlie. You go write the position paper. You draft the speech. And I think the reason why you haven't seen appointments yet for his senior economic team is he's still trying to figure this out. I mean, it was only, a little over a week ago that he got elected president. And until then, getting elected had his total focus. Now the economy has his total focus. So I think he needs to appoint his economic team very soon, in the next week or two, But it's reassuring that he has not jumped right into it, because it means that he's taking enough time to get this right.
Is it reassuring? It isn't to me that Rahm Emanuel is his chief of staff. I mean, he's certainly, you know, 20th century Clinton, you know, center-rightist, wouldn't have been my first choice, although, you know, they may have different functions in mind for him than I would have.
Well, every cloud has a silver lining. He's not my favorite guy either, but it means there's one less Clinton veteran who can get appointed, because he can only put so many Clinton veterans in there, and his whole slogan of change you can believe in stops being credible. I'll tell you, though, an offset to Rahm Emanuel, and I know this guy is not all that popular in Detroit, because he's had his tangles over the years with Congressman Dingell, but Henry Waxman is one of the most effective progressives in the House of Representatives, and as his chief congressional relations official, Obama has appointed Waxman's chief of staff, Phil Schiller.
Oh, that's cool.
I think Daschle is going to get a senior job in the Obama administration. So I think you're going to see a spectrum of people, but I think we have reality on our side in the following sense. As conditions worsen, the remedies are going to have to get bolder and bolder. And I think Obama is intelligent enough to realize that.
Well, we probably just have time for a summary remark on your part, Robert Kuttner. What can listeners do? I mean, most of us did the imaginative, the majority certainly here in the Detroit area in Michigan, of voting for Barack Obama and everything that he represents, the probably the best of American life. Now we got to have to get him to embody many of the things that you are
right.
Putting forth in Obama's challenge. What can someone who's only been a passive voter do?
We need to stay engaged. I mean, if you look at why Lincoln and Roosevelt and the Lyndon Johnson of the civil rights era succeeded, is they had social movements pushing them. Roosevelt had the industrial labor movement. Lincoln had the abolitionist movement. And, of course, LBJ had Dr. King and the civil rights movement. And I hope that the excitement that Obama has brought to politics will create a period of increased social movement that keeps the pressure on him to do the right thing. I mean, the kids and all the other people who got so excited, so organized for Obama, this should not just be a movement of Obama clubs. This should be a movement of social change, and I hope it will be.
Well, thank you very much, Robert Kuttner. Robert Kuttner is the author of Obama's Challenge, America's Economic Crisis and the Power of a Transformative Presidency. You can go to obamaschallenge.org or .com. It's also a link at peterwerby.com. Thank you so much for being on the broadcast.
Peter, thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
We wanted to give you more on the riff, but we ran out of somewhere to put it all. We said, screw it. Let's make a whole nother radio station.
What's that sound?
Riff 2. It's music made for the Motor City and totally commercial free. Log on from anywhere in the world at riff2.com. Everything that rocks.
Imagine having the money for liposuction, a nose job, or tummy tuck. Well, now you can get the cosmetic procedure you want from an independent board-certified surgeon, all for less than you think. That's right. The independent board-certified surgeons managed by Doctors Say Yes are making cosmetic procedures affordable to everyone. Now you can afford the treatment you want with financing guaranteed, no matter what your credit looks like. If you've been thinking about becoming the perfect you, just call Doctors Say Yes at 1-866-495-8189. Their independent board-certified surgeons have assisted over 30,000 people, and they can help you afford the cosmetic procedure you've always wanted. Call Doctors Say Yes for your free consultation. Call 1-866-495-8189. Your call is confidential with no obligation. Call 1-866-495-8189. That's 1-866-495-8189.
You're faking it, and it's killing you. You go around wearing a smile, pretending everything's okay. You put up a front to disguise the fact that you're really sick with worry about your health, about your sanity, about everything. And you think nobody understands. But I understand. You're irritable, you lose sleep, and your mind is racing with fearful thoughts. You want it to stop. You just don't know what to do. I'm Lucinda Bassett, founder of the Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety. I can show you how to make it stop. Please let me send you a powerful free tape that will help you discover a way to stop the painful anxiety and depression without abusing alcohol or taking medication. I did it, and so have hundreds of thousands of people just like you. Start changing your life from the inside out. Please call now.
Call now, and we'll send you this wonderful free tape. Call 800-944-1772. That's 1-800-944-1772. 1-800-944-1772.
Back to the Rock.
Party, party, party.
101. The Riff.